too high? Do you fall to the ground when you reach for the sky? Does the picture you have in your mind never turn out right?
Everyone, welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is May 16th, 2020, and you can join us live at nationallibertyalliance.org. Anybody who wants to maybe email a question, you can send your questions to questions, it's plural, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our National Liberty Alliance by clicking on the donations on the right-hand side of our website. You can find it on the top right-hand side. Okay, tonight we're going to pick up where we left off on our Bible reading. We're in the book of Romans, chapter 5, I believe we're in. And so we'll pick up there. All right, we'll be picking up in Romans chapter 5. Therefore, being justified by faith, we have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ,
by whom also we have access by faith into this grace, wherein we stand and rejoice in hope of the glory of God. And not only so, but we glory in tribulation also, knowing that tribulation worketh patience, and patience experience, and experience hope. And hope maketh not ashamed, because the love of God is shed abroad in our hearts by the Holy Ghost, which is given unto us. For when we were yet without strength, in due time Christ died for the ungodly. For scarcely for a righteous man will one die, yet peradventure for a good man some would even dare to die. But God commendeth his love towards us, in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. Much more than being now justified by his blood, we shall be saved from wrath through him. For if when we were enemies, we were reconciled to God by the death of his Son, much more being reconciled, we shall be saved by his life. And not only so, but we also joy in God through our Lord Jesus Christ, by whom we have now received the atonement. Wherefore, as by one man sin entered into the world, and death by sin, and so death passed upon all men, for that all have sinned. For until the law, sin was in the world, but sin is not imputed when there is no law. Nevertheless, death reigned from Adam to Moses, even over them that had not sinned after the similitude of Adam's transgression, who is the figure of him that was to come. But not as the offense, so also is the free gift. For if through the offense of one many be dead, much more the grace of God and the gift by grace, which is by one man, Jesus Christ, hath abounded unto many. And not as it was by one that sinned, so as the gift for the judgment was by one to condemnation. But the free gift is of many offenses unto justification. For if by one man's offense death reigned, by one man much more they which receive abundance of grace and of the gift of righteousness shall reign in life by one Jesus Christ. Therefore, as by the offense of one judgment came upon all men to condemnation, even so by the righteousness of one the free gift came upon all men unto justification of life. For as by one man disobedience many were made sinners, so by the obedience of one shall many be made righteous. Moreover, the law entered that the offense might abound. But where sin abound, grace did much more abound. That as sin hath reigned unto death, even so might grace reign through the righteousness unto eternal life by Jesus Christ our Lord. This is the book of Romans, chapter 5.
Okay, last time we've been reading our paper, an extraordinary action at Lord that we had filed last year, the end of 2019, we're at part three. We've got 2 weeks, two different parts over the past 2 weeks. We're going to read part three, and we'll take this to the end tonight. So we've started. I think it's, let's see, what page are we on? Page 32 of 50, or 41 of 59. You can follow along here on the browser if you want, or you can go to our website and click on Highlight Grand Jury, click on Action Against the Judiciary, and you can find it here at another time. It's Decision and Order, Declaration to Restore the Law. Okay.
This is part three of three, an action at law demanding a return to the law against the United States Supreme Court, the federal judiciary, both houses of Congress, and others. Decision and order by the authority vested in we the people by God, The following decision and order by this tribunal, also known as We the Sovereign People of the United States of America, more than 8,500 people assembled from every state of the Union and counting, was based upon 184 documents filed by the people listed herein titled List of Documents and docketed under the statutory case number 116-CV-1490 and law case number 1776, 1789, 1791, 2019. Said documents can be retrieved at nationallibertyalliance.org. The record shows that no defendant or respondent made any return. No defendant or respondent requested more time to answer, and no defendant or respondent provided any objections to the proceedings. We find the facts in this case to be overwhelming, self-evident. We find their silence and thereby acquiescence to be fraud. As in any case not stifled by legalese, the spirit of truth will always prevail as it purges darkness to be judged in the light. We, the tribunal, also known as the King's Bench, herein we the people find that silence can only be equated with fraud where there is a legal or moral duty to speak, or where an inquiry left unanswered would be intentionally misleading, and that it is the duty of the courts to be watchful for the constitutional rights of the citizens and against any stealthy encroachment thereon. It may be that it is an obnoxious thing in its mildest form, but illegitimate and unconstitutional practices get their first footings in that way, namely by silent approaches and slight deviations from legal modes of procedure. This can only be obliviated by adhering to the rule that constitutional provisions for the security of persons and property should be liberally construed. A close and literal construction deprives them of half their efficacy and leads to gradual depreciation of the right, as if it consisted more in sound than in substance. It is the duty of the courts to be watchful for the constitutional rights of the citizens and against any stealthy encroachments thereon. Their motto should be Aspa Principis. In January 2004, we the people invited all three branches of government to the conference to restore constitutional order held in Washington, D.C. and covered by C-SPAN. The government at the last minute declined to attend, so we went forward without them and sent them a video documentary. The record shows that no respondent made any return and no respondent provided any objection. A copy can be viewed at nationallibertyalliance.org. On November 11, 2009, people of America gathered in St. Charles, Illinois, as elected delegates from each of 48 states to discuss the federal government's constitutional violations and their refusal to be held accountable. The conclusion of the people's effort is a 63-page document called Articles of Freedom. The record shows that no respondents made any return and no respondents provided any objections. Delegates to the Continental Congress 2009 and others from each of the several states in the spring of 2010 ceremonially served this document titled Articles of Freedom, with its remedial instructions on each United States senator and representatives in their offices located in their representative states, and on each governor and state legislators of both houses, placing them on notice that we, the free people of America, believe them to be in violation of their oath of office and the Constitution for the United States of America, and thereby demand obedience to the law. The record shows that no respondent made any return and no respondent provided any objection. On May 20, 2015 through September 26, 2016, the grand jury, in the spirit of Magna Carta and the Declaration of Independence, as the sureties of peace on behalf of the people, served a writ of quo warranto, 9 writ mandamuses, 4 informations, 1 declaration, and 1 show cause upon the federal government and 50 state governments, sheriffs, state legislators, and state judiciaries.
The record shows that no respondent made any return and no respondent provided any objection. On December 14, 2016, the Common Law Grand Jury on behalf of the people opened a natural law court, whereas the court clerk required $400 from the grand jury to open a court of law. The people paid under protest. The grand jury stated that this extraordinary action is a natural law procedure at law, not unlike the unanimous declaration of the 13 colonies of America. Whereas 43 more writs, show causes, declarations, redress of grievances, letters, informations, 10 evidence documents, 56 challenges of non-judicial foreclosures, ignored as evidence, and 26 habeas corpuses, ignored as evidence, were served upon the respondents and defendants named above, who have all failed to plea and defend. This extraordinary natural law document, writ mandamus, demands that all elected, appointed, and employed bureaucrats cease all unauthorized activities, acknowledge and obey the law of the land, or resign your position. If defendants or respondents continue in their unlawful activities, the grand jury will answer with indictments. And if any clerk or judge mutilates, conceals, carries away, or denies the filing of these documents, the grand jury will answer with indictments under 18 U.S.C. 1001 and 18 U.S.C. subsection 2071. The people charge all the resistant respondents and defendants with contempt for their refusal to guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government and protect each of them against invasion. Natural law courts are not to be defeated by statutes and equity rules. The judiciary is to take judicial notice that fraudulent court procedures have concealed the people's right of natural law courts, which is an act of treason and fraud upon the court via judicial machinery. Be advised that this court of record proceeds according to the natural law and not equity, where the tribunal is the people themselves, untainted. Whereas elected and appointed judges decide in equity courts only, any attempt to interfere via summary judgments will be met with indictments. Any attempt to conceal, remove, mutilate, or destroy will also be met with indictments. Rights are unalienable. Legislators cannot legislate rights away, no matter what the bar outcome-based educated lawyers have instructed. Rights are unalienable, meaning not transferable, because they are bequeathed upon us by God and not man. Not even the people can give them up for themselves or others. Once the people ordained the common law as the law of the land, no man can abrogate it, because the Declaration of Independence was a covenant with God that only he can revoke, and thereby any attempt by the federal judiciary and Congress to abrogate it is an act of war against the people and their God. The covenant made between God and his people in 1776 empowered we the people to self-government. George Washington said the United States was built upon the fundamental maxims of true liberty, and that the basis of our political system is the right of the people to make and to alter their constitutions of government. But the Constitution, which at any time exists, till changed by an explicit and authentic act of the whole people, is sacredly obligatory upon all. The very idea of the power and the right of the people to establish government presupposes the duty of every individual to obey the established government. Sovereign people have an unalienable right of authority. By God were all things created that are in heaven and that are on earth, visible and invisible. Whether they be thrones or dominions or principalities or powers, all things were created by him and for him, and he is before all things, and by him all things consist. And through his natural law, we the people are vested with unalienable rights. Governments are not. Our government servants' power and authority is defined in the Constitution that we the people ordained and established. Natural law is written by God in the hearts of men. It is a process of maxims and common sense, and is very easy to see and grasp by the common people, because truth is self-evident. Defendants and respondents, being elected or appointed government servants, are to be cognizant that the first documented grand jury in 1215 AD was self-appointed. We the people have been entrusted to dispense justice through juries formed by the people ourselves. This natural law court of record of we the sovereign people, being the highest court in the land, needs no permission to assemble ourselves and adjudicate. Does the master seek leave from his servants? And the judges of the United States Supreme Court, with clipped sovereignty, being creatures of the law that we ordained and thereby vested with authority under the chains of the Constitution, have a duty to speak and acknowledge the law of the land on the record. Let us remind our servants that the first known documented grand jury was formed by the people themselves to put the tyrant king back under the control of the law via the Magna Carta, which was written by the people, who wrote their intentions and commands down on that historical document, where they declared, if anyone has been dispossessed without the legal judgment of his peers, from his lands, homes, franchise, or from his right, we will immediately restore them to him. And if a dispute arises over this, then it will be decided by the 25 jurors, of whom mentioned is made below in the clause for securing the peace. Moreover, for all those possessions from which anyone has, without the lawful judgment of his peers, been deceased or removed by our government, we will immediately grant full justice therein. Magna Carta, paragraph 52. And this is what we intend to do. We have many attached cases via joinder and many more to follow. Whereas in any case where we find that due process was denied and the defendants were carried away to jurisdictions unknown, we will nullify and immediately restore them via summary judgments. As to the construction with reference to the common law, an important canon of construction is that constitutions must be construed to reference to the common law. The common law so permitted the destruction of the abatement of nuisances by summary proceedings, and it was never supposed that a constitutional provision was intended to interfere with this established principle. And although there is no common law of the United States in the sense of a national customary law, as distinguished from the common law of England, adopted in the several states, in interpreting the federal constitution, recourse may still be had to the aid of the common law of England. It has been said that without reference to the common law, the language of the federal constitution could not be understood. 16th American Jurisprudence, 2nd edition, section 114. When the federal judiciary hears cases under civil and criminal jurisdiction, it is a de facto court, whereas the officers who conspired under the color of law, acting in a nisi prius de facto quasi court, not of record, proceeding in equity and not at law, and willfully injures, oppresses, defrauds, and deprives the people of the unalienable rights of due process, secured by the Bill of Rights, with the intent to proceed unlawfully to carry plaintiffs away to jurisdictions unknown. Such courts are inferior courts whose jurisdiction is limited and special, and whose proceedings are not according to the course of the common law. Criminal courts proceed according to statutory law, jurisdictions and procedures defined by statutes. Likewise, civil courts and admiralty courts proceed according to statutory law. Any court proceeding according to statutory law is not a court of record, which only proceeds according to the common law. It is an inferior court. Therefore, when a judge interferes in a natural law court to seize control of the tribunal via summary judgments in an attempt to quash justice, he is guilty of obstruction of court orders under 18 U.S.C. subsection 1509. Today, by this extraordinary mandamus, we order that defendants either repent and obey the law of the land or resign your positions immediately. Failure to act will result in the wrath of we the people via indictments. We the people demand an end to this tyranny and remind the respondents that the decisions of a superior court may only be challenged in a court of appeals. The decisions of an inferior court are subject to collateral attack. In other words, in a superior court, one may sue an inferior court directly rather than resorting to appeal to an appellate court. Decisions of a court of record may not be appealed. It is binding on all other courts. However, no statutory or constitutional court, whether it be an appellate or Supreme Court, can second-guess the judgments of this court of record. The judgments of this court of record, whose jurisdiction is final, is as conclusive on all the world as the judgment of this court would be, meaning the United States Supreme Court. It is as conclusive on this court as it is on other courts. It puts an end to inquiry concerning the facts by deciding it. Federal judiciary. Federal trial courts jurisdictions are equity courts proceeding under the rules of equity and whose jurisdiction is defined within USC titles, which proceeds with one appointed judge. When opened under one of the USC titles, those decisions can be appealed. All courts operating under USC Title 1 through 57 are inferior court, whose jurisdictions are limited and special, and whose proceedings are not according to the course of the common law. Criminal courts are courts under USC 18, whose jurisdiction and proceeding is defined by statute. Likewise, civil courts and admiralty courts proceed according to the statutory law. Any court proceeding according to statutory law is not a court of law, which only proceeds according to natural law. It is an inferior court. Law courts, also known as courts of record or natural law courts, proceed according to the rules of the common law, where the judge is not the tribunal, but the magistrate who administrates the will of the petit jury, we the people, whose decisions are final and cannot be appealed. Even in criminal cases driven by statutes under USC titles that we the people authorize, the petit jury continues with their sovereign power of nullification of any statute that they find inappropriate or repugnant to the facts of the case and where mercy can prevail. We the people have sovereign immunity. Samuel Adams said, "The natural liberty of man is to be free from any superior power on earth, and not to be under the will of legislative authority of men, but only to have the law of nature for his rule. Laws are made for us, we are not made for the laws. Under our system of government, upon the individuality and intelligence of the citizen, the state does not claim to control him, except as his conduct to others, leaving him the sole judge as to all that affects himself." Sovereignty itself is, of course, not subject to the law, for it is the author and source of law. The very meaning of sovereignty is that the decree of the sovereign makes the law. A consequence of this prerogative is the legal ubiquity of the king, his majesty, God, in the eye of the law, is always present in all his courts. Though he cannot personally distribute justice, his judges, the people, are the mirror by which the king's image is reflected. We the people did not authorize Congress to legislate law for the federal courts to prosecute people who are not a bureaucrat or not participating in interstate commercial activities, but only under the following four instances: counterfeiting, piracies on the high sea, laws of the nation, and treason. Federal prosecutors have no authority to seek an indictment against one of the people unless they are employed by the federal government and thereby fall under a controlling U.S. code, are engaged in commercial activity between states, or are engaged in unlawful commercial activity between states, such as human trafficking, drug trafficking, sex trafficking, trafficking counterfeit goods or services, advocating the overthrow of the government, identity theft, hijacking, racketeering, antitrust, assassination, bankruptcies, fraud, embezzlement, child exploitation, child pornography, computer crimes, conspiracy, copyright matters, counterfeiting, counterintelligent crimes, cyber crimes, border protection, and the removal of illegal aliens, etc. USC jurisdictions. The United States Codes, Title 1 through 57, provide subject matter jurisdiction and personam jurisdiction in courts of equity for bureaucrats, namely elected or appointed and hired public servants, and for maritime and interstate commercial activities. These authorities can be found under Article 1, Section 8, Clauses 3, 4, 6, 8, 10, 15, 17, and 18. And like foreign diplomats, we the people have sovereign immunity from all legislative laws. Said titles do not provide for a personam jurisdiction of the people, nor can it, because it would be repugnant to the law, also known as natural law. Therefore, federal prosecutors have no authority to seek an indictment against a person for possessing a weapon or a so-called controlled substance, even if said person crosses state lines. USC 18 is not the law of the land. Title 18 is maritime and territorial jurisdiction and cannot be applied to the people unless, as we stated above, that they are a bureaucrat or involved in interstate commercial activities. Any attempt to try the people of legislative crimes is fraud and high treason. USC Title 26 is not the law of the land and cannot be applied upon the people. The Constitution clearly states in Article 1, Section 9, Clause 4, that no direct tax shall be laid. In the United States Supreme Court case Pollock v. Farmers Loans and Trust Company, 1898, the court defined a direct tax as a tax on personal income and said a tax upon one's whole income is a tax upon the annual receipts from his whole property and as such falls within the same class as a tax upon that property and is a direct tax in the meaning of the Constitution. The following are a few U.S. Supreme Court decisions that made clear that USC Title 26 does not apply to personal income. The 16th Amendment does nothing except move the income tax of the indirect classification of duties imposed on foreign imports and into the indirect classification of excise imposed on privileges and commodities. Since the income tax is without apportionment, by virtue of the wording of the 16th Amendment, it cannot be a direct tax, because direct taxes must still be apportioned. So the income tax is still an indirect tax. Income has been taken to mean the same thing as used in the corporate excise tax of 1909. The worker does not receive a profit or gain from his or her labors, merely an equal exchange of funds for services. By the previous rulings, it was settled that the provisions of the 16th Amendment confers no new powers of taxation, but simply forbidden the previous complete and plenary power of income taxation possessed by Congress from the beginning from being taken out of the category of indirect taxation to which it inherently belongs. Congress cannot, by any definition of income in this case, it may adopt, conclude the matter, since it cannot, by legislation, alter the Constitution from which alone it derives its power to legislate, and within whose limit alone that power can be lawfully expressed. In construing federal revenue statutes, Supreme Court gives no weight to Treasury regulations, which attempts to add to statutes something which is not there. The 16th Amendment does not justify the taxation of persons or things previously immune. It was intended only to remove all occasions for any apportionment of income taxes among the states. It does not authorize a tax on salary. Plan to return to Republican principles. Madison to the people of the state of New York, according to the provisions of the most of the constitutions, again, as well as according to the most respectable and received opinions on the subject, the members of the judiciary departments are to retain their offices by firm tenure of good behavior. Judges are creatures of the law and are bound to obey it. If judges break the law, they can be removed for bad behavior, prosecuted, and sued for damages. They are duty-bound to obey the law. If judges fail to defend the Constitution when it's brought before them, they war against it and must be removed. The United States Supreme Court confirmed in the case of Marbury v. Madison that unconstitutionally legislation is null and void. And in Cohen v. Virginia said decency, security, and liberty alike demands that government officials be subject to the same rules of conduct that are commanded upon the citizens. In a government of laws, existence of the government will be imperiled if it fails to observe the law scrupulously. Crime is contagious. If government becomes a lawbreaker, it breeds contempt for the law. It invites every man to become a law unto himself. And against that pernicious doctrine, this court should resolutely set its face. Judges have no more of a right to decline an exercise of jurisdiction which is given than to usurp that which is not given. The one or the other would be treason to the Constitution. No judicial process, whatever form it may assume, can have any lawful authority outside of the limits of the jurisdiction of the court or judge by whom it is issued, and any attempt to enforce it beyond these boundaries is nothing less than lawless violence. When a judge knows that he lacks jurisdiction or acts in the face of clearly valid statutes expressly depriving him of jurisdiction, judicial immunity is lost. A judge must be acting within his jurisdiction as to subject matter and person to be entitled to immunity from civil action for his acts. When a judicial officer acts entirely without jurisdiction or without compliance with jurisdiction requisites, he may be held civilly liable for abuse of process even though his act involved a decision made in good faith that he had jurisdiction. We the people vested in the United States Supreme Court as final arbiters over all inferior federal courts in Article 3, Section 1, the judicial power of the United States shall be vested in one Supreme Court and in such inferior courts as the Congress may from time to time ordain and establish. The judges both of the Supreme and the inferior courts shall hold their office during good behavior. And since Congress has neither the backbone nor the will to do their duty, and if the United States Supreme Court does not perform an extraordinary act necessary to secure our Union, then we the people most certainly will. Wherefore, for the reasons stated herein, it is hereby ordered that the United States Supreme Court is to take action and secure the Republic on behalf of the people by removing judges and bad behavior. Any judge who does not comply with his oath to the Constitution of the United States wars against that Constitution and engages in acts in violation of the supreme law of the land. The judge is engaged in acts of treason. Hooper versus A. Aaron. We have reported subversion against the people from within the federal judiciary. Indictments are imminent, and immediately decree via writ mandamus to all federal district court judges and magistrates that 1. They are to return the decorum of the court. The United States Supreme Court has a duty to secure the people's court by commanding judges not to trespass or hijack courts of record. 2. Federal district courts are to obey the law of the land. 3. Federal district courts are to acknowledge natural law courts. 4. Federal district courts are to hear habeas corpus cases within 3 days and dispose of the case justly. 5. Federal district courts are to cease all prosecutions of people under USC Title 18 that are not bureaucrats or not involved in interstate commercial activities. 6. Federal district courts are to cease all prosecutions of people under USC Title 26 for income tax or failing to file. 7. Federal district courts are to provide a form to file a natural law court case for cause. 8. Federal district courts are not to charge statutory fees in non-statutory cases and of courts of record for justice. 9. Federal district courts are to give judicial notice to all district courts that courts of record are natural law courts and therefore the rules of Title 28 do not apply. USC Title 26 is not positive law. With the exception of destruction of the abatement of nuisance by summary proceedings so permitted under 16 American Jurisprudence, 2nd edition, 114, summary judgments are not permitted in courts of record. Any judge who tries to prevent the right of the people to petition the government for a redress of grievance under Amendment 1 commits a crime under USC Title 18. If a federal prosecutor would like a grand jury impaneled, they are to call them forth through the administration entrusted by the people of the county, that is, to lawfully impanel an impartial, untainted, informed grand jury. And if an indictment is procured, the said administration shall impanel an impartial, untainted, informed petit jury. 10. Jury tampering and stacking. We the people have the unalienable right to consent or not to consent as to the government's accusations against the people. The handbook for federal grand jurors and trial juries are subversive and are 100% proof of jury tampering in every single federal court, and therefore shows the need for free and independent grand and petit jury administrators. All officers of the court, law enforcement agencies, U.S. Marshals, and legislators of statute are employed by the government and or are members of the bar, which teaches their members to be anti-constitutional and anti-common law, and thereby subversive by simply maintaining their ignorance of the Constitution and the common law, as they are trained to place the letter of the law above the essence of common law, that being justice and mercy. Allowing our servants to control the jury has bred absolute government corruption and control. Therefore, it is the unalienable right of we the people to provide for the administration of our grand and petit juries ourselves within our counties. 11. Amendment 10. The assumption of sovereign power and the institution of government by consent are acts of supreme authority which the people alone are competent to perform. And accordingly, it is in the name of and by the authority of the people that the judiciary was vested, whereas the United States Supreme Court and federal district courts have seized power not delegated to them in violation of the 10th Amendment. A case in point, the people are to decide through courts of justice and not judges via courts of equity. The abortion issue, which is a natural law and not a positive or human law issue that was unconstitutionally adjudicated by the United States Supreme Court, which is an equity court governed by codes and statutes. This brings the issue into its proper jurisdiction, a natural law court of record, adjudicated by the King's Bench, which is the jury, we the people, consisting of 12 people who are to mirror the will of nature's God, answering to him alone. The United States Supreme Court does not have the authority to act like God's adversary, that they can change God's law. We read in Daniel chapter 7, verse 25, and he shall speak great words against the Most High, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and think to change the times and the laws. Amendment 10, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor forbids it to the states, are reserved to the states, respectively, or to the people. The United States Supreme Court and its federal judiciary is in bad behavior. They have unlawfully treaded upon the rights of the people and the states to govern themselves. And most alarmingly, they think that they can change the laws of God. Therefore, the United States Supreme Court and its inferior courts are to immediately cease their lawless jurisdictional advances designed to spread their socialist agenda, stop encroaching upon the people's unalienable rights protected by the 10th Amendment, and stop legislating from the bench or suffer the consequences of indictments for subversion, conspiracy, and treason. To Congress, the Declaration of Independence was a covenant between the people and their God, placing themselves under his law, and thereby we receive the blessings of liberty. Upon this foundation, the Constitution was framed, and its Bill of Rights became its crown by which all legislation is tried. While the Constitution can be amended as per Article 5, the balance of power between the three branches of federal government, the sovereign states, and the sovereign people cannot be altered in any way that would affect that balance. This was Jefferson's freedom formula founded in the Bible, which prevents the misconstruction or abuse of government powers. Its self-evident truth and genius was immediately recognized and embraced by our founding fathers. It is our American heritage, and any attempt to alter that balance is an act of war. The biblical formula vested the people paramount, and any legislation that is repugnant to our unalienable rights is repugnant to the law of the land and thereby null and void. We were clear that Congress shall make no law that will infringe upon our heritage, and via Article 6, we required that all elected and appointed bureaucrats to be bound by oath or affirmation to support the Constitution. Congress, in response, wrote the required oath of office to be taken in Title 5 U.S.C. subsection 3331. This oath necessitates that elected or appointed oath takers are to support and defend the Constitution. And if their personal views are too strong as to prevent them from upholding that oath, they would not be worthy to be our stewards, because their oaths would be a lie. People have freedom of speech, and thereby have a right to express any view, including atheism, communism, socialism, Nazism, etc., as long as they do no harm. They also have the unalienable right to remain silent when questioned by the government or anyone. But elected and appointed servants, when faithfully discharging the duties of their office, have no right to be silent, but to the contrary, have a duty to speak, for to be silent would be fraud. They also do not have the right to express a view that does not support and defend the Constitution while they are faithfully discharging the duties of their office. Therefore, while faithfully discharging the duties of their office, if they campaign or champion to advocate any position that would abrogate a natural law, such as the right to bear arms, it would be a violation of their oath, an act of war against the Constitution, placing them in bad behavior, and the only proper remedy is removal from office. And if Congress does not have the backbone or remedy by impeachment via Article 2, Section 4, and Article 1, Section 3, Clause 7 for bad behavior, then we, the people, will via indictments. Ordered that the United States Congress, both houses and Senate, is, number one, to impeach and remove all judges that are in bad behavior. Any judge who does not comply with their oath to the Constitution of the United States wars against that Constitution and engages in acts in violation of the supreme law of the land. The judge is engaged in acts of treason. Two, to show by what constitutional authority they act when they propose legislation. Three, to legislate law that the Constitution and civics are to be taught in elementary and high school. Four, Congress is to restore the original 13th Amendment. In January 1810, Senator Reed proposed the Title of Nobility Amendment. The Senate voted to pass by a vote of 26-1. The House resolved in an affirmative 87-3. By December 10, 1812, 12 of the required 13 states ratified in 1819. We suggest that Congress combine the latter 13th Amendment and the 14th Amendment. Under 16th American Jurisprudence, 2nd edition, section 177, Congress is to repeal the 17th Amendment for the following reasons. Said amendment usurped the states' independence, whereas these states have been deprived their equal suffrage in the Senate in violation of the Constitution, Article 5, and the balance of power, thereby removing their sovereignty and destroying the republican form of government that the federal government was to protect under Article 4, Section 4, and upset the checks and balances of power between the states and the Federation. The 17th Amendment also robbed the states of their ability to exercise powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor forbidden by it to the states. That was reserved to the states respectively, or to the people, protected by the 10th Amendment, and thereby stealing the states' sovereignty. Furthermore, the 17th Amendment was not ratified, and many unconstitutional acts by Congress and the judiciary would have been prevented if the states were not deprived of their clipped sovereignty by the unconstitutional 17th Amendment. We are a nation of law, and because the 17th Amendment wars against the balance of power, and if an amendment cannot be procured, nullification by Congress is sufficient. The 17th Amendment cannot stand. 6. Congress is to clarify that the 16th Amendment, which attempts to turn the people into indentured servants and subjects them to debtors' prison, does not and cannot authorize a direct tax. 7. Congress is to repeal all legislation that subjects the people to government authority. We the people vested the United States Congress with 17 powers to write regulations, codes, statutes under Article 1, Section 8, Clause 18. None of the said legislative powers permitted legislation of the people's behavior, only the behavior of bureaucrats and commercial activities. Congress has no authority to write a penal code to punish the people or a tax code to enslave the people. The people are not subject to any of the laws of the United States without their permission, and they give their permission when they engage in activities defined under Article 1, Section 8. 8. Congress is to provide law and funds to properly secure our borders. Our servants have exposed we the people to all the dangers of invasion from without and subversion from within. Our servants have obstructed the laws of for illegal aliens who are flooding our nation with foreign insurgents, some hostile, destroying our economy and putting at risk the security of our states. 9. Congress is to make regular, not restrict, commerce with foreign nations and among the several states and with the Indian tribes. 10. Congress is to coin money and not print paper money not backed by gold or silver, nor is Congress to pass their vested power of coining to foreign bankers. 11. Congress is to coin only gold or silver. 12. Congress is not to turn over control of our post offices to foreign control. 13. Congress is to cease taking money from special interest groups for favorable vote. Congress was sent to Washington to represent the will of the people, not corporations. To sell your vote and soul to the highest bidder is hereafter a bribe and thereby a felony. 14. Our language is clear in Article 1, Section 3, Clause 4, which states, "The Vice President of the United States shall be President of the Senate, but shall have no vote unless there be equally divided, and that there can be no rulemaking that can abrogate our law. Therefore, Senate decisions, unless we said otherwise, need only a majority vote to pass. Obey the law, or we will remove all that resist their indictments." And commanded that all elected, appointed, and hired servants are to obey the law of the land and to join we the people in our quest to reinstate the Constitution for the United States of America and bring justice to all subverts who resist. And resolved and decided that any resistance, mutilation, or return documents will be answered with indictments. It is so ordered. August 14, 2019, Albany, New York, signed by the Jury Foreman Natural Law Tribunal and sealed.
Okay, just a quick note. I perceive most people know. By the way, how am I coming through? Am I coming through okay? Testing 1, 2. I hope so.
Yeah, quite loud, John. You're good.
Okay, thank you. All right, for those who may not realize it, you know, you can follow up and re-listen to some of these programs that we do on Monday night. We record these programs 3 hours every week, and you can find them under our weekly call page. Again, for those who don't know, or if you miss a Monday call and you wanted to catch up, okay, here's the recordings. We do try to give it a title so that people can look at different subject matters and maybe go back and review or listen, especially if they've listened or just to re-listen again. So that's one of the things. The other thing people should know
of course, we have under people's duties the things that we the people should be doing. So these pages should be looked at very carefully, and people should be participating and pursuing these processes in their own counties, because we must have government by the consent of the people, and that comes from the grassroots level. It can't come from some organization like National Liberty Alliance or any other group in a national way or a statewide way. It needs to come from right there in your election districts. That's where we, the people, have consent of government. So the grand jury, of course, the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, we are acting on behalf of all the people as people are getting educated and building up the necessary things they need to be doing on the county levels to bring back the militia, bring back the elected committee men, and also take control of the courts through the administrations of the courts, becoming administrators. We're looking for four people in each county. But anyway, we've been filing these papers. We've been filing them for quite a few years. There's a lot of activities we've been doing, and you know, I was involved with a lot of other activities prior to National Liberty Alliance, who were also, again, was doing the same thing, trying to get government to obey, but they just remained silent, which makes them frauds. At every level of government, they just don't want to answer. They will not answer. And that's a bar thing. That's a bar attorney thing. You know, they're told, don't say nothing. You know, we'll talk for you. We'll be your filters. Don't say anything because you only incriminate yourself, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But anyway, our action here against them, you can find under the grand jury action against the judiciary. It's a declaration to restore the law of the land. It's an extraordinary action. We read the beginning of our decisions and orders, which we started on August 17th, 2019. This case was opened up quite earlier. I believe it was 2000. We were filing papers for quite a few years, but then I think it was 2017 when we opened up this case originally and then moved it over into a court of record. We originally opened the pages up to get a case going and to act as a place where we can file our papers so that we can be under the auspices of the court as we file different papers, whether it be informations or maybe just filing a paper of a show cause, or doing habeas corpuses, or involving ourselves in cases where people requested us to assist them in non-judicial foreclosures, CPS cases, APS cases, all these family court cases where people are thoroughly abused. They're the most evil courts of the world, in my opinion. They need to be shut down and done away with. And there's a very simple solution, which we'll discuss one day. I don't know whether we've written a paper on this yet or not. I don't recall that we did, but we will write a paper concerning how we can do something better than have these family courts. If an individual is going to be brought into some kind of a hearing where they can, you know, lose their control of their parents or the care of their parents or their children, then they need to be doing this in a court of record where the people decide. Not where these insane individuals who are making tons of money, RICO on steroids, are participating in these administrative courts, acting as if they are courts of justice, when in fact they are nothing more than courts of injustice. A lot of papers here. This is really a good place to get educated, especially if you're in the courts. You know, you can filing papers and doing different things. By reading through our papers, there's a lot of things you can pull out of our paperwork and use it, make your papers really put a lot of source inside your papers, you know, because we give a lot of sources on where we get our information. Okay, with that, we're going to move over to a couple of things. First, we're going to take, is there any announcements or anything, Jan, before we go into questions?
There's no particular announcements, but I do have a number of questions.
Okay, well, before we go to that, we do have a visitor with us tonight. I know Lydia Radin. She was with us a couple of weeks ago. I'm not sure whether she was on last week, but 2 weeks ago I was going to try to give her some space to talk. She's going to take maybe 10 minutes, and tonight we're going to let her talk about a few things. She's doing a lot of the same things we're doing. She's doing it down in New York City and battling out different things, mostly with landlord cases, but also a lot of abusive federal court cases and and other state courts and so on. So let me unmute Lydia. Lydia, can you hear us? You got the mic?
Yeah, thank you so much. I appreciate
okay.
it.
Okay, introduce yourself a little better maybe and tell us what you have to share with us.
Well, as you know, I've been working with, I guess I called myself a concerned citizen because there's a number of groups that are doing what National Liberty Alliance is doing. You go into court and you want an honest proceeding, and you usually get, you know, a dishonest proceeding. So whether you're in landlord-tenant court or, you know, you're fighting false criminal charges or, you know, whatever you're doing, we started forming groups to help each other. I knew a pro bono attorney at the Nassau County Civic Association, and he recommended that we go into court with observers. So one of the ways I got involved with National Liberty Alliance was through Courtroom Observers Network. And I think there was a case in California where they did this. A bunch of people just went into court, and they documented what the judge did wrong with affidavits, and ultimately they got the judge removed. And I had done this before I went to medical school with women organized against rape. Usually rape survivors would go to court, and they'd get steamrolled. You know, the courts would be terribly unfair. So we would go in and observe and put in affidavits. And we got federal laws changed that were more fair to rape survivors at that point. The reason why I'm calling is because John does some very good things at the National Liberty Alliance. He wakes people up. He educates them to the law. And I got involved in a couple cases which are ongoing where the concerned citizens spoke up and, you know, called judges and sent in emails and faxed and advocated and made a lot of noise. And we were retaliated against. So one of the cases that I got involved in was with my independent producers union. And John's trying to teach you about 18 U.S.C. Section 7, Special Maritime and Territorial Jurisdiction. So there's a little trick that they use. I mean, John wants you to have a deeper understanding of the law, but I butted heads with the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Southern District of New York, and I did it a little more simple way. If you look at 18 U.S.C. Section 7, which is Special Maritime and Territorial Jurisdiction, and I happen to have my computer in front of me, it says Part 3, Special Maritime and Territorial, let me go up a little bit here, I'll read it. Special Maritime and Territorial Jurisdiction, as used in this title, includes, and then 1, it says the high seas, 2, any vessel, 3, any lands reserved or acquired for the use of the United States. So I had gone to a hearing with my producers union back in 2016, and they were trying to give us a hard time. So they had a private contract security guard harass me. And when, you know, I spoke up and defended myself, they slapped me with some false criminal charges. And they tried to charge me under 18 U.S.C. Section 7, Special Maritime and Territorial Jurisdiction, claiming that the courthouse that I was in at 500 Pearl Street was under the Special Maritime and Territorial Jurisdiction of the United States. So here's a resource that you can go to that I found very helpful. In fact, one of the resources that you can use, in addition to reading all the materials that John gathers for you in the National Liberty Alliance, you can go to the U.S. Attorney's Manual. So as I'm Googling around to, you know, find my case, I stumbled on the U.S. Attorney's Manual. It's very helpful. They spoon-feed you Supreme Court cases. And here's what they said. You know, they're telling the U.S. attorneys, who, by the way, never read the federal prosecutors never read this manual, but it's your best secret weapon. So they're writing in the U.S. Attorney's Manual, you know, just because it's a federal building doesn't mean that the government owns it or acquired it, or the United States owns it or acquires it. You should always, they're telling the U.S. attorneys, you should always call the General Services Administration, the General Counsel, to check what the jurisdiction is at your building. So I thought, well, there's an idea. So I called the General Services Administration. I called Carol Latterman. You can look this up on the internet. General Services Administration down at 500 Pearl Street. That's supposed to be the Southern District of New York. And I asked Carol Latterman, I said, could you please confirm or deny if this building at 500 Pearl Street is in special maritime and territorial jurisdiction in the United States? And she said, no, it wasn't. I was like, thank you so much. So then I went down to the FBI, and I filed a criminal complaint against the federal prosecutor who was trying to use this statute unlawfully. And they had to drop the information that accused me of violating 18 U.S.C. 113, which, by the way, is not a crime. If you look up 18 U.S.C. 113, it says whoever is guilty of an assault within the special maritime and territorial jurisdiction of the United States shall be punished as follows. So I caught the federal prosecutor. They misconstrue, they lie, they cheat. And what you can do if you're filing a case is go to the U.S. Attorney's Manual, see what they have to say, particularly under constitutional law and civil rights, because they have – you're paying for this, by the way. The U.S. Attorney's Manual is put together and it's put online, and you're paying for all your government servants to collect this information, particularly on Supreme Court cases. So go there, read up on it, and use the information that they never use, because the prosecutors never read this stuff, and use it so that you can be successful as I was in getting an information against me dropped. And what had happened was I went to a hearing, and the government didn't like what I had to say. I was challenging a bunch of judges, and they had a private contract security guard harass me in the public hallways at 500 Pearl Street. And when I stood up for myself, then the private contract security guard tried to rough me up a little bit and then claimed I was resisting arrest. And then tried to charge me under 18 U.S.C. Section 113, whoever is guilty of an assault. I assaulted nobody. I was the one who was assaulted, claiming that the building at 500 Pearl Street was under the special maritime and territorial jurisdiction of the United States under 18 U.S.C. Section 7. And this literally took me about 5 minutes to go to the U.S. Attorney's Manual, read the little blurb that said, you know, you're in buildings. You don't know who owns these buildings. You don't know whether the U.S. the government is renting these buildings or they're privately owned and the government's just renting rooms. You have no clue. Go to the General Services Administration and ask. And because I did that, and yes, I have the audio tape of me speaking to Carol Latterman, I had to force the U.S. attorney into dropping an information. So these heavy-handed prosecutors in the Southern District of New York were angling to put me in jail for 5 years and a $100,000 fine, and they shamefacedly had to drop that information against me because I read the U.S. Attorney's Manual. So, John, you're giving your audience a deeper understanding, but they can also use this to force dishonest prosecutors not to put them in jail, as I did. So I hope you find that helpful. Hello?
Okay. Yeah, it took me a second to find my mic here. Okay, we appreciate it. Thank you very much.
All right.
Okay, we're going to move on now to some questions. Jan, I don't want to spend any more than maybe 5-10 minutes at the most. At some point, if there's that many questions, we'll pick them up next week. But go ahead with what you got, and let's see what we can do. By the way, Gerard, are you here with us? I am.
And actually, before you go to Jan, I'd just like to take a second to thank all the membership for their wonderful cards and support and donations. I'm overwhelmed with the response. You made the country bigger and smaller for me at the same time because I have people from all over the United States that, you know, are supporting me, which makes me feel good. It doesn't matter where I go, I feel like I got friends in these different states. And I hope they know that if they're in my area, they're my friends also. So it's been very, very uplifting for me for the very generous response of the membership that has come out, you know, for me because I did have an accident and I broke my back and I'm kind of flat on it right now. So it was very, very edifying to see the response. And I just want to thank all the membership and let everybody know that's donated that they are in my prayers as well. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Drew. I appreciate that. And we'll pass things over to you in a few minutes after, or when we turn to Brent.
Okay.
But let's go through a few questions here. And like I said, I don't want to spend too much time on it. I want to move over to Brent and then over to Q&A. But, Dad, let's see what we can do.
Okay. NLA has filed an amicus curiae, removal, habeas corpus, and default judgment on my behalf. But both the county and federal courts have ignored all filings. I have challenged jurisdiction at 3 pretrial hearings, but I'm still incarcerated, and court activity has been suspended due to the virus. I feel I will have to plead guilty to something I am not guilty of, because if I go to trial, 8 months could turn into 2 years. When I am released, I would like to file suit, but are there any common law attorneys that can be trusted to actually defend the people's violated rights?
Hey, well, look, the best we can really hope for, and I do believe it's going to happen the way we are, proceeding, and that is at some point when these judges have no longer a place to hide, when the deep state is gone and they have no more protection, especially when the federal courts collapse, and that's what we're looking for. Look, they got a break at some point. They cannot continue to go on ignoring the law. We have filed our papers, up in the Northern District here of New York and the Federal District here, Northern District, and we've also filed it in numerous other places. We served it on all the individuals involved, and in the case, this case that was also brought into our, as a joinder into our case, we will proceed, if we haven't already done so, we will be proceeding and going forward with an indictment on those judges. We're continuing in just ignoring the law and ignoring the people, bringing people into jurisdictions unknown, and just continuing in their assault upon the people and the Constitution. So we do intend on, they're going to get an indictment. I may be working on another paper, maybe that we can kind of follow afterwards what we've been doing. And I don't know whether it sounds like this was probably a habeas corpus, since the person's incarcerated. So anyway, at some point in time, and I think it's going to happen this year. Again, depends on what we see, what goes on. Q says that it's going to be a hot summer, and we can already see that the wrath of is really coming down upon these people now that. The Justice Department has been releasing papers, on a daily basis now, and Q is on a 10-day countdown. I don't know if people have realized this. I know X-22 covers this. Q is on a 10-day countdown, and we are on day 3. Every day, more and more things are going to be released. And so we're looking forward to see where we get to by day 10. Anyway, there's also talk of military judicial process with certain individuals, particularly the vice president and the president, meaning, of course, the previous administration. But, once the federal courts finally fall, and we're going to have a very serious, decision to make coming up in the very near future. Because if these judges, these federal judges, particularly the United States Supreme Court, they've been completely notified of all these problems and all the things that have taken place. They cannot deny that they've been notified. They cannot argue the abuse of law, not only by that court, making decisions in areas that they have no business making decisions in, but particularly they're to oversee the federal district courts. And they have the ability to write writs of mandamuses to those lower courts and command them to obey the law, and they're refusing to do it. But once the deep state is gone and they are no longer stuck between a rock and a hard place, the olive branch is removed, and they'll have a very short period of time to do the right thing. And if they refuse to do it, we the people really got to seriously think about indicting those judges. We're talking about the United States Supreme Court justices. There are 9 of them. We have to really consider whether we're going to indict them or not. I don't see any way to get away from it, but we'll see if it comes down to it. hopefully they'll be obedient to the law and start to do the right thing. You know, the president is pressing pretty hard on the law, and he says that the Constitution has to be obeyed, so we do believe we have him on our side. A lot of things we've done, talked about, or brought up, things that you never hear anywhere. All of a sudden we hear certain words being used by certain people in the administration, so we kind of hope that maybe they've been listening to what we've been talking about and considering, you know, how they're going to go forward. If we don't fix the federal courts, we're in big trouble. We're never going to get back our nation again. We have to bring that court under control. It starts with the United States Supreme Court and the federal judiciary. After that, when that court proceeds according to law, which they have to because it's in the Constitution, when that court proceeds according to the law, and all other courts that are inferior to that court, because remember, you know, they get to decide, their jurisdiction is the Constitution, and any violations against that Constitution, they must get involved with, and they must rule through summary judgments, you know, immediately to free individuals and to uphold the law and send out writs of mandamus and so on and so forth under penalty of law. And so they need to be doing that, and once the federal courts are caught back up, then all of this abuse in the state courts, the county courts, the city courts, the village courts, and any other town courts, and so on, all of that will cease. But that's going to take time, but I do think the time will probably be this year. I do strongly believe. And that's why, really, we all need to be moving on educating ourselves in order to be taking these positions up and taken back and having government by consent again. Okay, another question or two, Jan. Let's see how it goes.
Okay. Why doesn't NLA use social media sites to get their message out and use it to bring people to the website as a recruiting tool? Seems like word of mouth hasn't been working for a long time, and there are ways to find people who want to do something about the problem and be willing to help and get involved if they knew more about what NLA is trying to accomplish.
Well, that's a great question, and it's something we've thought about quite a bit, and we've tried to get people to assist us with that. And we need people that have an understanding on those processes and work with us to get out the right message to these people. We do have some people who are doing something, but everybody should be pushing through social media and different places what we're doing. You know, someone should get a hold of X22. And let him know, Dave over there, that what we're doing, get him to look at our website and listen maybe to a few things we're doing and hopefully take us on as an interview. So that would be good. BCP, we'd like to get, he doesn't really do interviews, I don't think, BCP. But there are other places out there that does interviews, and we definitely need to be there. Whoever wrote that idea, maybe they can volunteer some time to help coordinate and organize, get a committee going to do those things. We'll need a couple of people or whatever amount of people. Actually, everyone should be out there putting out the message of National Liberty Alliance, telling people how the only way we're going to save America is have government by consent again. The president and his administration can do great work to bring us back to where we need to be, but if we don't bring the courts back and we don't bring a political process back to the people for them to be the consentors of, which we should be and can be, 100% control of our 100% control of our government. Let me repeat that. National Liberty Alliance is teaching ways that we can have government by consent. This has already been set up by our founding fathers. We can have government by consent and have 100% control of our government. Wouldn't that be great? But people have to get educated. They have to become the committeemen. They have to take control of the courts and become administrators. They have to connect themselves with the local militia. And there's a lot of projects we have going on and committees going on, and people need to get involved. Okay, I'm going to take one more question.
Hey, John, we do have a Facebook page. We just don't have anybody to really run it properly.
Right.
It's and there. We get comments and you know, they get a lot of packaged answers, but it does lead them to the website. And even at that low level, it does bring people to the website. But, you know, I'm not savvy with Facebook. Look, I practically broke out in a rash to take out a Facebook account because I'm that type of old-fashioned person that I just didn't like to do it. My kids are on it, and I try to tell them, get the heck off of there. You put your whole life out there for everybody to read, you know. But anyway, you know, I mean, the government definitely likes it. They spy on people with it, and so that was my problem with it. But we do have a page, so if anybody is savvy, we certainly could use help because a lot of people come in and they'll ask a question and we miss it, and that's a shame because it is another thing out there that we could be, you know, using better to bring more people in. So we have it, and if that person knows how to, you know, properly put things on Facebook and put them in such a way that, you know, your identity is safe and all that other stuff, all the other things you really should know before you post on Facebook, hey, we'd be very happy to let them do that for us. Okay? Thank you.
Okay. So, again, we need volunteers, as many as possible, to do all kinds of things. And, you know, we need more people involved in our court. Dennis, what do we call that, Gerard?
The courtroom observers?
Courtroom observers, that's it. We need people involved with that more.
Very powerful and very helpful.
And we need everyone to respond to a court case that might come up in your area where you live. And, you know, even if you have to take off a couple hours from work and in order to go to the court case, sit down, listen what's going on, and write an affidavit on behalf of the individual being abused in that courtroom. Because one day you may need that, and we'll be there for you, too. So we need to help each other. So we need to get educated, and we need to get involved. So, again, if that individual is savvy and has the ability and understanding, being able to really be working on Facebook or Twitter or any of those things, then we should. I'd like to get on to someone who can get onto Twitter, and we should set up maybe something with NLA and try to put some, some things out where we see, for instance, where Q is talking and the president is putting out different tweets and other people are involved. We should try to get involved in that, too.
We do have a Twitter account, John.
Yeah, but the thing is we need someone who can run it and understands how things work and to get into that conversation that we're talking about with the president and
okay.
with other people who's involved. So let's dig in deep. Again, anybody who's got knowledge, connect with Terry. You can find Terry through Jan. I think, Terry, your number should be up on a directory, isn't it? Let me see.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, let's go to the directory and see. You can get a hold of Jan, and Jan will connect you with whatever committee or any of the people that need to be done. But I'm looking for Terry in here. Let's see. Terry Moore right here. Okay. Well, you're doing a lot more than the ham radio, so... let's see. We should probably update this list. But right there is a number, 303 number. Anybody that wants to get involved with the Twitter or with who's handling Facebook? There's no one handling Facebook at all, right? Just that we've created a page.
No, I think somebody's there.
Is there? Okay, well, we need more people involved, and we need people who have an in-depth or understanding of a lot of these things and, you know, connect us in the right places. But when it comes with making statements and things of that nature, we want to check with the national leadership to make sure what we put in there is correct and what National Liberty Alliance is really teaching and doing. We don't want to say things that exaggerate what we're doing or things that may injure what we're doing when we're not doing it something. But anyway.
And that leads into what I was just going to say. It's good you said that, because what I was going to say is, whenever Donald Trump tweets something, or even Q or whatever, that has to do with, you know, unalienable rights or something, they should be sent to us, the administration, and we should respond. We should make a response, or, you know, if we get somebody that's savvy that we trust, they can make the response. But whenever there's a big issue out there, I think it would be very important for us to respond either, you know, positively or negatively if we don't agree. You know, I mean, sometimes we want to teach Trump things. He says things, you know, and we say, well, that's kind of off. Of course, we find out a lot of times that's the psyops that he's doing, but we should respond nevertheless, you know what I mean, because it's an education for the public out there. So we're missing an opportunity to put ourselves out there and as far as being the premier common law authorities, and that's what we can become by making those common law responses to what is said on Twitter. I think it would be very powerful.
Exactly. On those venues, we have to stick precisely to, teaching ultimately in those conversations the common law, the Constitution.
Well,
that should be our statements. We shouldn't get involved in the political side of things or any of those things.
No.
Negative
that's right.
or positive, just tell the truth. Get the truth out.
And that's why when we respond, it's got to be run past the leadership so that, you know, because those responses are speaking for NLA, for everybody, and we want them to be spot on. So, you know, either we're going to answer it, or if you think you have a good answer, you can put it in there, and then we'll okay it, and we'll put it down as NLA's response. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. You know, look, if we could have been involved in that national communications, that conversation taking place with all these other individuals, and you know, that's being reported on by some individual like X22 and BCP. But you know, just take for instance this thing with the judge. There's one judge, Judge Selvin, and he's trying to pull in a retired judge to come in to make a decision to try to push forward on, prosecuting the general, even for whatever. I don't know what it is he thinks is going to prosecute.
It's unconstitutional. Everything he did is unconstitutional.
Yeah, but one of the key things, though, is even if he does come in as a prosecutor, he's still got to go to a grand jury to get permission for an indictment. So he can't skip past that. Of course, you know, the judge is supposed to be impartial and respond to only what's brought before the court. So, of course, that, when he stepped over the line to try to push against what the prosecutor is saying and pull some other judge in to get some kind of a decision to go forward, you know, that's totally insane. But nevertheless, we should get out into the minds of the people what the Constitution has to say about all these things. What is the solution? If every time a problem comes up, a situation takes place, and we can put a constitutional answer out there, we'd be educating a whole bunch of people at the same time, and hopefully, encourage people and entice people to come to National Liberty Alliance to learn how we can have government by consent. And that's just one thing. I mean, often I wish I could make a statement here or there to get it out there, but again, we need someone who understands the venue and can get this message and get us to the right place and get our message out. Okay, I think we'll end the questions right there. We'll pick up the rest of them next week because we're running pretty late here. I'm going to move over to Brent. Brent, are you ready to go? And Gerard, are you ready to take the controls?
Yep, full speed ahead.
Okay, as soon as I introduce Brent, you can take the controls. Brent, you there?
I'm here.
Okay. Okay, we're going to move over to Brent Winters, and he's going to teach us a little something about the law, the common law, the Constitution. Brent Winters is the author of quite a few books. One of them is The Excellence of the Common Law by Brent Allen Winters. His website is commonlawyer.com. Brent, you got the mic. And Gerard, you got the board.
Thank you, John and Gerard.
And anybody not speaking, maybe they should be muting themselves. Go ahead, Brent.
All right. Thank you, John and Gerard. I'm sure you're not able to do what you were able to do before this problem arose, but you sound like you're on top of it. I'm glad to hear that. I want to say also at the beginning, like I always try to do, that my comments are my own, may or may not agree with the leadership of National Liberty Alliance, and Terry is with me. Terry says, put on more volume. Okay, I'll try, Terry. If that's not enough, say it again. I think I've got it all the way to the top. We're going to talk about a subject that's near and dear to my heart. Who can argue that America is not God-blessed? I'm trying, Terry. She says it's not being heard very well. It's close to my mic. America is God-blessed, and from the Pilgrim's Fathers' demand on common law's freedoms and on through our redemand of those same freedoms during our war of separation from Britain and forward, Americans have insisted upon governing themselves according to the laws of nature and of nature's God. Well, they differed, of course, on what that means. Sometimes, Terry says I'm doing better, sometimes they have misconstrued what that means, but they still have said that's the standard. And the natural outflowing has been staggering. America has been an engine of freedom and wealth, hitherto unknown, indeed never before even dreamed possible in the history of Adam's race. And nonetheless, acting against this light, government officials, magistrates, and agents are ever more bureaucratic. And also, just the American people themselves are bureaucratic-minded. People run in herds, something terrible. Oh, everybody's got a mask on. I got to wear one, too. If I don't, they'll look at me funny. I had a lady tell me that. She wears the mask because she didn't want to look funny. Well, you look stupid with it on, but go ahead. That's being bureaucratic-minded. That's where we are. We've strayed from freedom's paths. And as long as those that are holding the levers of power can get us to do it, they're going to continue to laugh at us and fleece us and rape people. That's what it is, just stealing from them, laughing, and thinking that they've gained the upper hand. And Americans are stupid enough to go along with it. Coronavirus, closing businesses, we're going headlong into lawlessness, robbing Americans of life and freedom and the rest of mankind. We're robbing the rest of mankind from freedom's beacon. Well, that's what America is and has always been, freedom's beacon. But nevertheless, one weapon for freedom remains wholly within your grip. No matter what they do, those guys, the useful idiots of the evil empire, Christendom even, D-U-M-B, oh, it's out there. Your right to remain silent is wholly within your grip. And no government employee, regardless of the amount of force applied, can stop you from using it. And even though the law demands and allows a judge to jail a witness who refuses the judge's orders to testify under oath, the law deems such a refusal, as long as it is respectfully asserted, the law deems it a civil, not a criminal, contempt. Simply put, asserting one's right to remain silent against a judge's opinion that one is not in real and appreciable danger of prosecution does not give one a criminal record. But note well, it could get one thrown in jail. Hence, good sense demands that while one learns the truth of the law, one must never ignore the always present human lawlessness in high-powered places. As are all other men, the hearts of policemen, government office holders, and other government employees are flawed beyond knowing. Oh, yeah. Flawed beyond knowing. The hearts of all, that includes you and me. You think you're a pretty good guy or gal? Well, I tend to think that about myself sometimes. And then I stop and say, now, wait a minute. Wait a minute, I just can't see my own weaknesses. And I've made commitments that I was surprised I didn't keep. That has happened. What do you do in such a case? You make it right, that's what you do. But the government won't do that. Don't expect them to do that. Oh, every once in a while you'll see it, but not very often. That's what God demands of us, that we keep admitting our weaknesses and keep trying to be trustworthy. Don't concentrate on finding somebody to trust as much as you concentrate on being trustworthy. That's what will make the difference. But never be fooled. Power never corrupted anyone. Men are corrupted from the get-go. They have that weakness in them. That's called corruption. You're already flawed. All men are. The men in government are flawed and tainted. Putting on a uniform, putting on a black robe, holding a high government office, president, congressman, senator, bureaucrat, whatever, governor, holding a high office doesn't sanctify anybody. Well, generally, it makes them more dangerous. The more power you have, the more exacerbation of the corruption that you've already got gets. Flawed, Jeremiah 17:11, famous verse in the Bible. The heart of man is desperately wicked. Who can know it? Answer? Well, it's a rhetorical question. Nobody. James Madison, the chief architect of our Constitution, he's called. His favorite course of study while at Princeton was Old Testament Hebrew. And in light of this Hebrew text, Jeremiah 17:11, James Madison held that if men holding government offices were angels, our Constitution would be unnecessary to restrain them. But, of course, they aren't angels. They're men. And men at their best are still men at best. And that ain't saying much. That's why the Constitution is put in place. Another tool to use to restrain them. The man who seeks and holds public office or employment for other than self-serving reasons is a rare bird indeed. I ran for public office a couple times. Oh, I was sincere. Naive. Oh, yeah, naive, too. Thinking that other people in public office were as naive as me. And they were there because they really wanted to do something worthwhile. I really believe that they were there. They really believed that they believed they were there for some other reason than bilking the taxpayer. I had a fellow running for mayor back home, came home from the Army. He was a 3-star general. You say, well, that's pretty impressive. Not really. I mean, 3-star generals are a dime a dozen and don't amount to a pinch of dried owl droppings, really. But people thought he was a big deal. He wanted to run for mayor when he got home. And the newspaper said he was standing on the courthouse square and the snowflakes started coming down. He looked up and he said, "This is America." Well, for a man that's been kept by the government for 30 years, I suppose he would say silly things like that. He did. Got him elected. People didn't realize the reason he wanted to get elected was he wanted to bilk the government some more. Was he a worthwhile man when he was a general, worked right with Arnold Schwarzkopf and all that? Well, yeah, I'm sure he was, did his duty. Patriotic, probably. But it doesn't take away from the reality that he's a mere mortal, and he's out for himself. And you give him power, and he's going to have problems. That's why the Constitution is important, I dare say, any of us. If we were in the position of those folk in government, we'd be like them. By the way, if you aren't like them, you'd probably get thrown out. Oh, you'd have to be awful tough. That doesn't justify them in the least. No. But let's recognize who we are, who they are, and just quietly and confidently go about learning our Constitution of the United States, recognizing that without God there is no outside force that can limit government. It has to be an outside force. No, a force within government will never limit government. That's silly. Utterly silly. Ain't going to happen. Well, hence, good sense demands that while one learns the truth of the law, one must never ignore the always present human lawlessness in high-powered places. As are all other men, the hearts of policemen, government office holders, as we had said, are flawed beyond knowing. Well, Madison believed that, as did, listen, I just interviewed a fellow that wrote a book, professor at a university of history, and he wrote a book about the 8 most prominent shakers and movers in the founding of our country. All the big names you've heard, Madison was one of them. And he concluded that they were not deist. He also concluded that they were not Christian, as we understood the term. But they were somewhere in between. He called them rationalist. In other words, they all believed the Bible to some degree, as long as it made sense to them. They didn't, they'd reject it. Some of them believed it entirely, but I'm here to tell you, we put too much stress, and he does too, in my opinion, on these visible men. America was not founded by Madison, Washington, Jefferson, James Wilson, Gouverneur Morris. No. America was founded by Americans, and there were about 3 million of them. They're the ones that made it happen. Without them, they were the ones that ratified the Constitution of the United States. They were the ones that accepted it, not those other fellows. Those other fellows were the ones that devoted their lives to having high positions and glory. That's what it's all about. Don't you think for a moment that George Washington did not want glory? Of course he did. Every military officer does. If you don't, there's something wrong with you. The other thing he wanted, he was very hurt. Very hurt as a very young man. He wanted to be a British officer. And the British officer corps of the British Army looked down upon him very hard and said he was nothing more than a colonial. And he was slighted over and over and over again. Over and over and over again. And he finally got his chance to get them back, and he did. That's what motivated him. They offended him deeply. His family, his grandfather fled England, so because he supported the king. He was a monarchist in the war against Parliament. He was a blue blood. The Washington family were blue bloods. They believed they were a special aristocracy. That's why he was fitted to the task, and we thank God for him. But he was a man, just a mere mortal like you and me. As the Bible says, subject to like passions as us. But God used him in a very, very powerful way that has lasted a long time, and he'll use you too. God will confound the wise with the simple, he says. Well, that's what he did with these fellows. But let's talk about the folk that really have the power. Well, Lord Acton. You know, Lord Acton's the one that said, Lord Dalberg Emmerich Acton, he's the one that said power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Well, he was wrong a little bit on that, because power never corrupted anybody. As I said a while ago, men are corrupted before they ever get power. That's the problem. Once they get the power, that it just exacerbates, it excites that corruption in them. But he said this, he was a smart man. He said a lot of smart things because he had thought a lot of things through. He said this, listen to this. This is a quote, Lord Dalberg Emmerich Acton. The danger is not that a particular class is unfit to govern. And then he says this. He says every class is unfit to govern. Well, of course, that includes me and you, you see. Yeah, he was a learned man. He had good sense. Sure did. Donning a uniform, taking a title, holstering a gun, or getting appointed to an office will never make anyone more fit to govern. No, it just makes them less fit to govern. Once they were more fit before they started, because the corruption in them had not been exacerbated yet. Well, back to the idea here that you have the power to govern. And you start with your own body and with your own tongue. Always do good. Insist upon your freedom to follow the law and enjoy its protections, while demanding that government employees follow it. Also, listen, you're not to expect that government employees, office holders, will follow the law. It's really silly. Really silly. No, they're not the ones. Even Justice Scalia said, you know, people complain to him that the Constitution, Justice Scalia, is gone now. And we're thankful for him, too. He said this. He said, states' rights are important. And he said, people look to me and the Supreme Court to enforce state rights. He said, let's get real. He said, who do you think signs my paycheck as a Supreme Court Justice of the United States? he had it wired. He said, well, it's the Treasury of the United States. That's where my money comes from. Why would you expect me and those other eight men or whatever they are on the court today, on the Supreme Court, why would you look to us to support states' rights? I mean, I'll do it all I can, but you're wasting your time focusing there. Focus where you can really control things. That's the problem. You're looking to other people to do your job for you. You, the people of the United States, have the job of governing. We're the folks that you put into office that are supposed to enforce the law and to uphold the law and to undergird the law with our court opinions. And you want to just go do what you want to do and sit back and trust somebody else to take care of you. It won't work. Never has it worked, and it won't work now. No, you must make the decision as to what is right, what is wrong, what is constitutional, what isn't. I've said it often, I'll say it again. Lawyers are not going to change America. No, Americans that are not lawyers are going to change America, and the lawyers then, when they see what the consensus is, more and more of them will uphold what is lawful. You folk here in NLA have the power to do your best in all sincerity. Don't be afraid. If you really find some point of law that you know has to be true, don't waver from it. You're the enforcers. You're the ones that are supposed to demand that the government be caged like a beast, caged within the boundaries of the Constitution of the United States and the constitutions of your state, caged within the boundaries of true law. Without question, to have trained oneself to keep silent, and that's self-government, as a first instinct is admirable. God has given to you, each one of you individually, his authority over your tongue, the absolute, non-delegable power to remain silent. And the Bible accords. God desires that you discipline silence into your soul as your leading instinct. As government evermore drunkenly bloats with money and raw power, its coarse groping reaches ever more wider, clutching at more people, while its slivering limbs plumb ever more deeper, prying into the innermost reaches of private conscience. Boy, that was a mouthful, wasn't it? That was a quote, by the way. Well, who wrote it? Yours truly wrote it. Let me read it again. I've got to contemplate this myself. I wrote this a long time ago. As government evermore drunkenly bloats with money and raw power, its coarse groping reaches ever more wider, clutching at more people, while its slivering limbs plumb ever more deeper, prying into the innermost reaches of private conscience. What's to be your response? Well, you are to remain silent. That is to be your first instinct. That's probably a pretty good place to stop. Well, no, I'm going to say just a little more. The bureaucratic police state's overbearing tentacles not only slither within government, reaching throughout its every part, but now and onward into each individual life, on every hand, the American feels more and more under the threat of police state-like invasions of privacy. And as a result, welling up from deep within comes a heartfelt sense that just as he has the right to speak, the American, freedom of speech, he also has the right to stay silent, freedom not to speak. Our Constitution of the United States says no person shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself. No person shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself. That's our right to remain silent. What does it mean? It means no man is required to slit his own throat with his own tongue. No man is required to provide the rope with which to hang himself, although some do. That's been the custom. But even beyond knowing these Fifth Amendment words of guarantee, the American need to know the reasons. That is, the first principles behind these words. What words? That no person shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself. We need to know that and understand why that is true. Why is it true? What does the laws of nature unwritten in the nature of creation and the laws of nature's God written in the Bible say about that? Gerard, back to you. Are you there?
Okay. Thank you, Brent. That was good. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
You're kind of low, but yeah, I can hear you.
Gerard, I'll have you know my son just brought me a half a quart of warm, fresh, drawn milk from a goat.
Oh, no kidding.
I know you like goat's milk. I'm going to drink it here while you're carrying on.
Well, I'll tell you, when I was drinking it regularly, and then I tried to drink cow's milk, cow's milk tasted like water to me because, you know, anything you buy in the store, it's homogenized and it's,
yep,
you know, it's worked on and just doesn't taste the same. So people think goat's milk is horrible and this and that, you know, and it can be if you're not careful. It can have a very goaty taste if you're not careful when you're milking them and you got a billy goat too close. Yeah, it'll get a goaty taste. But when it's good, it's better than cow's milk, I think.
Yeah, me too.
So let's see. We have some questions here, but before we get into the questions, I just want to make a statement. I've noticed around here where I am in this rural upstate Catskill community that there seems to be a dividing line amongst the people, and it's very easy to tell by way of who is wearing a mask and who is not. Now, I suggest that by not wearing a mask, and I've been not wearing one purposely now, that is a form of civil disobedience. Now, there's a couple of reasons why I think now is the time to pull the mask off and defy them, because all the evidence says that wearing a mask is the most ridiculous, unhealthy thing to do and counterproductive, and it doesn't work anyway. Even if there was, you know, even if you had an airborne virus, that virus will go through that mask. It's like 2 microns. There's, you know, when they're working on these bio-level 4 labs, they don't wear a mask. They wear a space suit with air pumped in. That's how they keep the virus out. So all it is an exercise to see who's going to obey and who's not. And it's very easy to see from a distance. And I think they did it purposely so that they can have the satisfaction of seeing everybody run around with their masks, people exercising, running down the road themselves with a mask on. I mean, that's a good way to pass out. And it's also a good way to reinfect yourself with your own bacteria, because what happens is that when you breathe those things out that the body is supposed to get out by breathing, they go on the mask, and it's like a petri dish. It gives it a place to colonize, and then you breathe it back in, and you breathe it back in stronger than what it was when you breathed it out. So there is medical evidence. The Stanford study says that we need to stop this quarantine because they quarantined too many healthy people, and that's what lowered our herd immunity. That's how Fauci knows that when we come back out, we're going to get a spike, because he kept healthy people inside Lysoling their counters and thereby lowered the immune system of Americans. I mean, Americans' immune systems are low enough because we eat all this high fructose corn syrup and processed food, and that's all part of a plan. You know, of course, people have been abandoning that as of late, and that's another reason they need vaccines to give them a shot in the arm, because people are figuring out how to heal themselves without their medicines. So this is a guaranteed way for them to make money from the taxpayers through the government. So I suggest that everybody tear their mask off. I carry a copy of that Stanford study, and I would tell any cop that if he thinks that he can beat me up and arrest me for not wearing a mask, he needs to be very careful, because he's going to be in that federal lawsuit that I will put out on anybody that violates my rights, and he's enforcing an unlawful order. And he will go down just like the guys in Nuremberg that said, I was just following orders. No, 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 no. You don't just follow orders. When you get an unlawful order, you're supposed to disobey it. You have an oath to the Constitution, and if you don't know what that Constitution is, then you have no business out there pretending to enforce it. So unless we really step forward with some kind of civil disobedience, the next thing is they will be going house to house, and they will be forced vaccinating you. And there's a guy, Alan Dershowitz, he's supposedly a constitutional lawyer, and he says he believes that they can forcibly vaccinate you if they know that they're giving you something to prevent you from getting other people sick. That in his mind, the government has a constitutional right to do that. Well, his interpretation of the law is so off, I wouldn't go by what he says anyway. So I'm just saying, look, that's an easy civil disobedience thing to do. And if there ever was a time for civil disobedience, it's now. Because if we don't civil disobedience and we don't put these governors and these legislators back in their place, the next thing is going to be is they're going to be coming door to door and we're going to be locked down. They're going to be chipping us. They're going to be tracking us and tracing us. It's going to be China 0.2, because this is what they do in China. They have two cameras for every three people over there with facial recognition. And the whole New World Order plan was to import that system here. And they haven't given up on it. They've been stymied because they didn't expect Trump to get in. Thank God he did, because we would be way further ahead on this agenda. So everybody has to get together and know what the law is and know what the Constitution says and know how to articulate it to law enforcement officers. And if you speak intelligently, you know what? They back off because they're not so sure. And you tell them, I'm going to hold you personally responsible. I'll be sending you a notice of liability. So not only is Cuomo going to go down, but you're going to go down with him like those people in the Nuremberg trials that said, I was just following orders. And they said, too bad, that was an order that you shouldn't have followed. So, okay, I'll get off my soapbox now and take questions. Okay, the first one is, it looks like, I'm an Army brat. Okay, let's get you up there. It jumped down to the bottom. I'm sorry. David from North Carolina, go ahead.
All right, how's everybody tonight?
Oh, we're all good, so it seems.
So I hated to hear about your back injury.
Yeah, very unexpected, but I'm making the best of it.
Well, I believe that the time has come to take back what is ours. And the only way we're going to be able to do that is for each one of us to get as educated as possible as to how they have got us under consent. And most people don't even have a clue to how they begin with that. One reason is that they're busy trying to make a living. They have a family. They're caught between a rock and a hard place. But the thing is, if they would just start looking at how they write their names, for instance. That's an easy one. They write their names in all capital letters. And I know I spent 12 years in school with the teachers trying to beat it in my head how to write a proper noun in upper and lower case letters. However, the first process I ever received from them, it was in all caps. And it just goes on and on and on like that. And that's how they try to get you to consent over to their nonsense, is to make a joinder with them, with that state-created evil twin, that all-capital-letter nom de guerre. That's just a little something I wanted to say tonight.
Okay. Thank you very much for that. And We all have that, feeling and those ideas, and hopefully, everybody knows who they are and where they are, and that's the trick. Okay,
yep.
Let's go to, I'm an Army brat. Go ahead. I'm a Marine Corps brat, by the way. Are you there? I know I heard you. Come back. You were there just a second ago. What did you do? Unplug your mic? I hear something. Are you talking? You're going once, going twice. I'm an army brat. All right, I'll move to the next one, and then we'll maybe come back to you then. Okay. I'm going to go over to Dennis from Pennsylvania. Go ahead, Dennis.
Hello?
Yeah, hello.
This isn't Dennis, but this is the icebreaker from Pennsylvania. How
okay.
are you doing tonight?
Very well.
I want to talk. Can you hear me okay?
I can.
Okay. I just wanted to make some comments on the census, and I do have a poem that I'd like to share. I notice on the census, I know we're supposed to, according to the Constitution, count the people every 10 years, but I notice that they ask certain questions that I don't think should be on the census. For instance, they ask your name, they ask your age, do you rent, do you own, are you in an apartment, or are you in a house, what is your nationality? And we want your phone number in case we need to get in touch with you. So I know a lot of you probably filled that out recently, but as far as counting the people, how much information do we actually need?
Well, no, you're absolutely right with that. And, you know, and they have a couple different forms of that census. Yeah, I believe they have a short form and a long form, and the long form really gets into some crazy stuff, very personal stuff. They want to know what time you get up in the morning and all kinds of crazy stuff that I would never answer. Go ahead.
From 10 years ago, I think they've added a couple more. They had 6 or 8 questions back in 2010, and now they seem that they have like 10 questions on there, so I really just put down, you know, one person, and I'm a male, and I believe is that all we need for, you know, to count for representation and so forth?
Well, that's right. That's all the government needs. They shouldn't need any more than that. Of course, you know, today the very big science is demographics, so any information they can collect and feed into the computer helps their database. So, you know, they're always, I mean, my goodness, you walk around with a smartphone, and just the other day I was looking up something, I wanted to find something out about spinal fracture since I have one, and I was researching it, and I asked how long does it normally take for it to heal without surgery, and I started typing, and up in the suggestion box came the exact medical right. term that they use, which I never put in the search engine. It says, how long does a burst fracture of the spine take? And I never mentioned that. I just put in, how long does it take a spinal, and it threw that in, burst fracture, which is the exact diagnosis of mine, to heal. So it's like, I know that phone is listening to me. I could be talking about skis or something, and next thing you know, a ski commercial pops up, you know. So they're listening to everything we say with them stupid phones. So
I know they're listening and they're watching, and the internet is amazing in what it can do, but it's also it opens us up to a lot of extra abuse.
Yes,
so, and as I mentioned last week in my poem, you know, like the Patriot Act, which allows them to listen even closer to all of our phone conversations and so forth, which was supposed to be repealed and never was, and the Freedom Act and so forth. Like Brent alluded to, we need to be vigilant, or, you know, with what we know, and try to cage the beast as much as we can.
Yes, so. And look it. They have their dream, their perfect world that they're trying to establish. And you know, in their mind, we're stupid. We need them to tell us what to do. And what they don't realize today is that, you know, God forbid we ever had a revolution or a civil war. You know, they think they have all these fancy gadgets. Well, they're going to find out really fast how the average America is so ingenious to defeat those things. You know, they like to show that directed energy ray that burns the skin and disperses crowds and all that stuff. But what they don't let you know is that it's very easy to defeat those things. And if you go and get a Mylar survival blanket that they sell in the stores for $1, and you wrap that around you, guess what? That ray won't bother you at all, and it costs $1. You can make a ghillie suit out of those things, and they won't even see your heat signal with their infrared. It's all simple stuff if you really know the technology, and that's what American patriots will be doing in the field if we have to. We'll be using things like Mylar blankets and low technology like Molotov cocktails and things like that. These things are devastating. And when you outnumber them 700-1, they got to be crazy to start a revolution with us. I mean, they've done the best they could to indoctrinate us before they ever come, you know, try to take us house to house. But I don't think that they're ever going to be ready for that. I don't believe it. I don't want to see it, but woe to them if that's what happens, because they have no idea what's out there in the field waiting for them. So,
and you're right, a little knowledge goes a long way.
Absolutely.
So here's my little poem. It's not quite as long as last week's, but, hello, Jim. I have to say hi to Jim. Humanity gets time out. Why COVID-19 and what's this all about? Did God give mankind a little time out? Time out for our poor behavior? The sovereign God, the judge, the savior, he cares enough to give us a warning. His love is new and fresh every morning. This would be a way to get our attention, because he won't settle for an honorable mention. We all have lusted, murdered, cheated, lied. But if the brakes of forgiveness are applied, his grace and mercy will not be denied. You know he is a good father. Otherwise, why would he even bother? This is it. This is our cue. He's buying. This blood's for you.
I really like that. That was really good.
Thank you very much.
Everybody's clapping. You can't hear them, but they're clapping. Okay.
Good night, all, and God bless you all.
Okay, you too. Have a good day. Okay, and it brings us to Rhonda, is the last person in the queue that I can see. Go ahead, Rhonda. I think you're up there. Yeah, Rhonda. You've been unmuted. Are you there? Did we lose you? Did I put you to sleep? You're unmuted, Rhonda. Going once. Going twice. Okay, I'm going to leave you unmuted. I'm going to go to April from North Carolina. And if you catch your mic before she's done, then you can say something and I'll pick you. Okay, April, you've been unmuted. Go ahead.
Hey, I was just curious if you were aware of the video that Aaron Bundy has been putting out.
No, I heard something that Bundy was putting videos out, but I don't know. I haven't seen or heard the one that Aaron Bundy had done.
I did watch it, and he was saying that the governor of Washington, not the state, Washington, D.C., has now They're putting in a bill number 6666 trying to get it passed that they can go door to door, and that in this video, I have the video, I've saved it, so if anybody wants it, just let me know and I'll message it to you. And that they could go door to door to ask you if you have gotten the shot, and if not, if you'll get the shot, and if you don't, they arrest you. And they're also going to do it if you're going state to state.
Yeah, so, I hear that, and you know, they're getting over the top too soon. I mean,
yeah.
I hope they do that, because that's going to wake everybody up, and it's not going to work. I don't believe it'll work. I think it'll create chaos. Of course, maybe they want chaos. You know, they certainly don't want Trump to win the presidency. So if they can go door to door, that's going to, you know, maybe suspend the election or whatever they think they're going to do. But whatever they think they're going to do, it's not going to help them. Look at you. If they suspend the election, then we still have Trump in there. You know what I mean? What do they think that's going to accomplish? You know, so
they want to blame Trump for everything that's going on. That's why they wanted him to quarantine us. And so I got so pissed. I mean, I was really pissed when I seen this video that I put out my own video and I blasted it over Facebook because I had enough.
You know, I do think that they were hoping that both Trump and Pence would become sick, and that they would make Nancy Pelosi the president. You know, Trump announced that he's taken that QualiCureCom or CureForm, whatever it is, and they were all taken aback because that prevents it as well as heals it, and they know it. And so he kind of like just slapped them in the face with that. So it's like they put plan B up, and then they got to go to plan C and then plan D. He's been defeating every plan that they've had. So it's going to be very interesting to see where it goes. And that bill 666, you know, look at when Hitler decided to take over the people, he turned around and put laws in that said that he could do what he wanted to do. You know, and they were basically unconstitutional laws, but because it was in a piece of paper, you know, and a group of people voted on it, he felt empowered by that for some reason. And that's all they're trying to do. You know, an unconstitutional law basically is no law at all. And that's why you need to be engaging your sheriffs and educating them on posse comitatus, because the only way we're going to take the country back is through that. And I don't believe that our military is going to cooperate very much, very long, with orders like that.
The National Guard, and they're training people, and they're hiring people right now they have ads out to hire people to take care of children that are put into concentration camps.
Yeah, well, you know, we'll see how that works.
This video, I think everybody should watch it.
Yeah,
I think this is all the wishful thinking at this point, because they're about ready to go down.
Yeah, they're never going to accomplish that. And all they're going to do is, you know, it'll be shot down so fast, because I don't believe Americans will do those things to Americans. I really don't. There are some Americans that will, don't get me wrong. There's some Americans that would do anything for money. But they can't hire enough evil people like that, I don't believe. And so they'd have to bring troops in from another country through the UN, and that would be war. Donald Trump would declare war on them immediately, as long as he's still there. And we, the people, would make war on them. So it's scare tactics, too, mainly. I really don't think that they're going to be able to go. Look, they claim they were going to go door-to-door for guns, and then you don't hear it anymore. I haven't seen them go door-to-door to guns, because the minute they go door-to-door to guns, the guns come out lead first, and they know that. They know that that's what's going to happen if they do it. They're not going to get much more than two or three houses before people decide that they're going to shoot rather than give up their guns. People are going to get real patriotic real fast in those situations, and you know, we may be soft and wimpy right now, but guess what? We'll toughen up real fast. You know, especially if the stores close down, there's no food, and we're put on a 2-week fast. You know what happens to men when they don't eat for 2 weeks? They become very sharp, and they're not no longer slowed down by all that sugar in their brains.
Well, they already
and they have a taste for blood.
They already started in my town with all the fast food joints not letting you get big hamburgers anymore. The meats are starting to slow down in the stores. I mean, they're already starting that. But I did want to let y'all know, my county and the counties around us, we all got sick from November to January, February. And we weren't tested, but we're all guessing it has something to do with all of that because none of us have gotten sick since then. And I also wanted to tell you that I do TikToks now, and I pay attention to a lot of things because sometimes you'll have people putting news on there. And what I think is funny is that they're saying all these hospitals are filled with sick people, yet all these nurses and doctors are doing TikToks. How are they doing TikToks if they have so many patients that are sick because they're not sick? And the percentage rate in New York, I think, is 0.0017. Is how many people that they're saying died from COVID-19, and we all know it's baloney. I don't walk with a mask either, and I refuse to. It's ridiculous. The nurses and doctors said that the masks do no good. They do not protect you, and that they're not protected. They're doing things on TikTok saying these things. I mean, there's so many things out there that are proving this is a big scam, and they need to stop.
Well, yeah, you follow the science, the real science, and that's why. That's one of the reasons they won't be able to convict you on that stuff, because you can go to court and prove that the whole thing was a scam, that it doesn't work, and that it was just an exercise in flexing their muscles. And once you read up on it and you realize it's a detriment to your health, when they tell me to put a mask on, I say I have a condition that precludes me from wearing a mask. And if they ask me what that condition is, they're not allowed to know. It's none of their business, because that's HIPAA. That's HIPAA. You can't ask me what it is. But if they really want to know, that condition is health. Health precludes me from wearing a mask because it's unhealthy for me. So I'm not lying. I have a condition that precludes me from wearing a mask. You don't put a mask on healthy people, and you don't quarantine healthy people. You know, if I really had corona, then I could be required to wear a mask if I go out. But unless you can prove that I have corona, you have no legal right to do anything to me.
But even if it is corona has killed less people than people with the flu or influenza. So this is just a big scam.
I'm just using that for example. It could be Ebola. I don't care. What I'm saying is they can't just assume that I have it. You know what I mean? Without knowing. I mean, if I went to a hospital and was diagnosed with some deadly disease, they certainly have a right to quarantine me. You can't have like Typhoid Mary going around infecting everybody. So if they know it, then there's an injured party. It's called the public if they can prove it. But if I haven't been tested and there's nothing wrong with me, they can't just tell me that I have to do this exercise in futility. Actually, the mask is only would protect me from you. If you had the disease and you sneezed, it would keep your droplets from coming on me. And this is not an airborne virus. I don't care what they say. It's not airborne. It goes in droplets. So, I mean, it can travel 6 or 8 feet if somebody very uncarefully sneezed and then you touch the surface or they sneezed on you. And the other thing is, look, if you want to be protected, if there's a virus in the area, you can have a mask on, but if you don't have glasses on, your eyes are a mucous membrane. If it gets in your eyes, you get sick just as fast or maybe faster.
It's all a lie. You got to think about this. If somebody you got a mask on and you have glasses on, and somebody who has it, any kind of disease, and they sneeze, no matter what, it's still getting on your clothes, and it's still going to last for a certain amount of hours or even days, who knows. And you're going to wipe that clothes on your face eventually, no matter what. If we're going to get it, we're going to get it. If we're not, we're not. It's just like the flu, the common cold, everything else. This is ridiculous, and people have lost their jobs, and people have lost their homes, and some people are losing their kids now.
Absolutely.
And then all the prisons are quarantining all the inmates into their cells, not letting them out for like 3-4 days to take showers or make phone calls. I mean, this is ridiculous. What they're doing to people is killing people.
Well, that's the whole thing is designed to do that. It's all about eugenics now, isn't it?
Yep.
So anyway, look, we got to do what we got to do in our own way, and people need to stand up for themselves.
Yep,
and
I'm right.
And I think that Americans will eventually. I mean, you got a certain class of people that would never stand up, And unless they see it on the news, they won't believe it. So,
yep.
They're tuned into that.
Majority of us willing to fight, so we're right with you.
Okay, thank you, April. I'm going to go on to Jim from Pennsylvania.
Have a good night.
You have a wonderful night. Thank you. Okay, Jim, you've been unmuted. Go ahead.
Okay, Gerard, you're coming across as patriotic as ever.
Okay, thank you. But
my question is pretty much directed towards Brent. I wanted to know if the Justinian Code is taught anywhere.
The Justinian Code. I don't know, Brent. Is the Justinian Code caught? I think they adopted it into their law.
Yeah, it's in all our courts, I think. Brent?
Yeah, I had to get my... Yeah, the Justinian Code is taught in every country of the world as law. It is the law of every country in the world except the handful of common law countries. All of South America, every country, all of Europe, all of the communist bloc countries, even yet today the communist countries are under some form of the Code of Justinian. The Roman Church is under the Code of Justinian. The canon law of the Church of Rome is the Code of Justinian of the 6th century. Emperor Justinian compiled all of the Babylonian law, that's really what it was, going clear back to the founding and the settling of the city of Babylon forward. He had his team of men that did nothing but compile that code, and then they called it the Logos. The Logos. That word's taken from John chapter 1, verse 1 in the Greek text. It's all over the Greek New Testament. And they intended by that to say that this is the highest form of rationality and reason that man has ever achieved. Indeed, it is God. That's what they said. And the Roman Pope affirmed that later in the 11th century. And he established the Justinian Code, tweaked into its ecclesiastical purpose, and that became the canon law of the Church of Rome. And he said, this is to supplant the Bible. And the canon law of the Church of Rome has been, the intention has been to supplant the Bible ever since. There are only two traditions of religion, law, and government in the world, period. That is the law of the land or the law of the city. The Code of Justinian is the law of the city of the Empire of Rome. It existed before the code was compiled. It just had never been compiled in such a what Justinian's team called an elegant fashion, perfectly balanced. And man, with the Justinian Code, man became the measure. Man, always in godlessness, had always been the measure of all things. But that was the most sophisticated compilation of man's mind being the measure of all things, called humanism. Humanism was where man is the measure of all things. The Bible said, Paul the Apostle says, we do not measure ourselves by ourselves. Listen, if you're 5'4", 6'6", 7'1", 5'2", doesn't make 6', or 5'10", doesn't make any difference how tall you are. If you measure yourself by yourself, you will always measure up. if you're 5'10".
I like that one.
Yeah, that's the funny thing. Funny, I should say. That is exactly what Paul the Apostle is saying. He's saying we should not measure ourselves by ourselves. Because if we do that, we'll always measure up. I don't care how low you are. I don't care how rotten you are, or how you're always going to justify yourself. Always. And God said no. And the folks that founded our country believe no. The laws of nature, as God has revealed to us in the nature of things, are law of the land. And the laws of nature as God, as he has revealed them to us in our Bible. He said that is the measure. It's an external standard, you see. It's not an internal standard. Every man does what's right, what he thinks is right, according to his own measurement. Well, that's what the Code of Justinian is. And it was an attempt to transcend every man, decide for himself, and say, we have the emperors of Rome, when they spoke they could not speak air, and we're going to put it together. So, no, every country in the world, and matter of fact, still in some South American countries, in all of their universities, and all universities are a product of Rome also, in all their universities, the degree is offered that's called the doctor of the civil and canon laws. The civil and canon laws. Civil is a word that means city, and canon is the city law, the code of Justinian applied to its ecclesiastic jurisdiction. There are most fundamentally, three forms of the code of Justinian in play in the world today. There is the canon law of the Church of Rome, which I had mentioned, and by the way, that Rome claims to be its own country, the Vatican, as you know. It's a sovereign state. That's what it claims to be. It has its own law. That's the code of Justinian applied to the ecclesiastic tradition. Then there is the German form of the code of Justinian, which is the German form. Many countries have taken that. Japan has taken on the German form of the code of Justinian, called the code of Bismarck. It was put in place in Germany about 1900. It just took the code of Justinian. Bismarck wanted to make everybody think it was his code, so that's the way emperors do. Put his name on. Then in France, of course, Napoleon, it's called the Code Napoleon because he put his name on it, said, this is my code. And by the way, Bonaparte, Napoleon, was from a family of Roman civil lawyers from Sicily. He wasn't even French. Isn't that amazing? This is amazing. he was Sicilian. Now, I may be off a little bit there. I say Sicilian. I think his family is from an island. Maybe it wasn't Sicily, but they were Roman lawyers. He was no stranger to all that. And then, of course, eventually Martin Luther, much to the detriment of Europe, he during the Reformation, he said, if you fellows, you electors in Saxony, don't take on the code of Justinian as the code of our country, you, as the leaders of our country, will not have the power to fight the Pope of Rome. So they said, okay, we'll fight fire with fire, and they did it. And in doing so, they replaced what we would call today our common law, which was the law of Saxony, the Germanic tribes of that part of the world, with the law of the city. And that's what enabled World War I and World War II, enabled those governments to have that kind of power. Because the Roman civil law, which is a reconstitution of the law of Babylon, where the law of the city was first organized at the settlement of the city of Babylon. That law is a law where government is deified. There is no appeal beyond government. That's really fundamentally what it is. There are other fundamental features, of course, in the law of the city countries, where the code of Justinian is. There is no jury. There is no right to remain silent. There is no right to keep and bear arms. Can you think of a place where you have a right to keep and bear arms? People say, well, what about Switzerland? Well, it's mitigated there. It's not our militia, not at all. It's pretty strong. It's pretty good. They've done pretty well with it, but it's still not our common law militia. So there's a grand difference between the two. There are only two. This is the fundamental ease of it. Many different labels, communism, socialism, republicanism, all the isms and schisms that we wish wasms, they're all out there. But it's just all smoke and mirrors. The evil empire is constantly throwing more labels at us to confuse us. But there's only two. There's only up and down, heaven and hell, good and bad, black and white, saints and ain'ts. That's what God says. And there's only two kinds of religion, law, and government, only two traditions. And I'm in good company when I say that. I'm not the only person that said that. That's why comparative law has been such an important subject in our common law country until very recently. Now the push is on to obscure the differences between the law of the land and the law of the city and say they're all the same. Well, their standards are often the same. You're not supposed to murder, steal, those kind of things. But when you look underneath, the foundation of it is, for example, you say, well, we have freedom of speech in Germany or whatever country it is. Yeah, but where do you understand your freedom of speech to come from? Permission from government? Or from God? And that's the grand difference, you see. We acknowledge the difference in America, and we call them fundamental rights when they come direct from God. In all those other countries, even if they say there's a God, if there's a Christianized kind of a country like Germany has been in the past,
then they'll say, well, no, we're not God. We just stand in the place of God. We have all the power of God. Just like the Pope of Rome. He didn't say he's God. He says, I have all the power of Jesus Christ. It was given to me. Well, that's Antichrist. Hitler was Antichrist. The Emperor of Japan was Antichrist. The Emperor of North Korea today is Antichrist. That means he's somebody who says he has all of the power of Jesus Christ, even if he doesn't mention his name. In a Christian country, they'll mention his name, like Germany, Nazi Germany. And in Russia, Russia's a law of the city country also. The Code of Justinian. It's changed a little, but it's still the same fundamental code. Well, that's a lot of talk. I hope I hit the nail with my head at some point and answer your question. Back to you, Gerard.
Thank you, Brent. That was good. And, you know, they made a big mistake when they told us we had the right to keep and bear arms, and they also told us we're all men are created equal. And people remember that, and they hold it in their hearts. And so I think that's one reason that they haven't marched in here and took us over, because, you know, a big portion of us did arm ourselves, and we do believe that we're free. And just the idea, even though men, a lot of residents and people that are born in this free common law country don't necessarily understand the law, they understand freedom because they lived it here.
That's right, Gerard. And I'm glad you made that comment, but you raised another point that I wanted to make and just follow up on what you said. But first I want to read what somebody sent me a message, and they said Napoleon Bonaparte was born on Corsica on 15 August 1769, just 15 months after France had purchased the island from the Italian city, state of Genoa. So so it was an Italian island, but France had purchased it. I didn't understand that. Thank you very much for sending me that message. But I had a Canadian friend I just got reconnected with, a long discussion. I'm so glad I did. Canadian friend. This Canadian friend told me, said, you folk have it better down there, and you don't understand in America what you got. And a lot of us up here by the hundreds of thousands want America to annex some of these provinces to the United States. I said, what's the matter? She said, well, we're scared to death. We can't get out. And the things that are happening up here, we know in Canada, she said, that we are the entry point for the target of all this craziness that's going on. I said, what's the target? She said, the United States is the target. We all up here know that. We know we're the entry point. And she said, the difference between us and you, and this is what is sad, we have the same legal tradition here. We're a common law country. But we don't have it put in a writing, written down, in a document that we all agree to and know about. And so they're taking the practice of our rights away from us. They, as you know, this fellow from Quebec, Trudeau, if I'm saying his name right, outlawed firearms almost entirely. She said, they took away firearms before, but I still have firearms. My husband still has firearms. Everybody I know has firearms, but in order to own a firearm in Canada, you have to have a card. Then you have to belong to a gun club, and your name has to be on the list, and you have to pay dues at the gun club to own a firearm. That's bad enough, but now they're taking them away. Well, you folk down there say, no, you can't do that. Like you said, Gerard, because it's in writing. That's a big deal. It puts it into our minds and hearts, and it preserves us through the generations, preserves it in our minds, and we say, no. It makes us think that there's really something to it, and that's important, and they don't have that. And she said it makes all the difference in the world. Back to you, Gerard.
Okay, thank you. I guess
Gerard,
I should say...
Gerard, this is Jim again.
I rest my case. Yeah, go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, I'd like to follow up on my question to Brent. In America, is the common law or the Code of Justinian taught in some type of course at the colleges or universities that I would be knowledgeable of what they're teaching? You know, that I would understand what they're trying to teach through, you know, the Code of Justinian or the common law. Is there any courses that you would be aware of that they're taught in America?
Hey, Brent, yeah. Wouldn't all civil law be considered, being the law of the city, wouldn't that be the same thing?
Well, yeah. Oh, no question, the principles of it. Yes, we
So we already have it in every town, every village, every county, every state. We have it everywhere. And that's called civil law. We need to shut it down. And that's one of the things we're working on.
The course that used to be taught in law school, mandatory, and then it became an elective in all of our law schools, and now I don't even know it's taught in many law schools, is called comparative law. And in every law school in America, comparative law is a required course of study. Comparative law is the discipline of comparing and contrasting the law of the land with the law of the city, the common law with what folk call the civil law. And our common law is not known until it's an adversarial tradition, so it's not known until it is assailed and attacked by the law of the city. Now, common lawyers have been saying that for centuries, and it's true. The law of the city is an inquisitorial system. You've heard of the Inquisitions of France and Germany, and they even do that here, where they torture people to varying degrees, just lie to you, tell you that other people have confessed, and if you don't confess, the government can lie, you can't. That's Inquisition. We are not an inquisitional system. We have real trials in America where people go to trial and they have battle. They do battle. They don't do battle in other countries at all. No, it's inquisitorial. That means the government just finds out what they can. Well, if the government has the freedom to find out what they can, torture is going to be the order of the day to varying degrees, and as it is all over the world. When you think of South America, somebody says torture, we all go, oh, yeah, we know they torture people in South America, and that's okay. And by the way, in their book, it is okay. You want to learn about torture in the Roman system, just read the gospel records and then read the book of Acts. It's all there. They wanted information out of Jesus Christ. Pilate did. So what does he do? He said, he turns him loose, and then he says, well, take him over here and flog him. Find out what you can. Well, that wasn't because he hated Jesus Christ. That's just the way they did things. That's part of the Roman system, part of the law of the city. All of those principles are creeping in here. If you want to know about the law of the city and you want to read a comparative law text, I would be amiss if I didn't refer you to the one I've written. You can find it on Amazon.com. It's comparing and contrasting the law of the land and the law of the city. I think John or somebody, I don't know if you did it, John, but it's on the NLA website, if I'm not mistaken, and where it points you to it. But go to Amazon.com, just type in my name, Brent Allen Winters, and that comparative law text will come up. It's called Excellence of the Common Law. And you can get an idea of what comparative law is. There are great, famous comparative lawyers through the years. Former dean of Harvard, called Pound. His name was Pound, Dean Pound. He was a great comparative lawyer. Merriman from Berkeley Law School at Bolt Hall. He was a great comparative lawyer. There were many others. William Franklin Fratcher from the University of Missouri in Columbia. He's deceased now. And I'm just somebody that's tried to compile information that I've learned reading men like that. Sir John Fortescue of the 15th century, a great comparative lawyer. He's the one that, well, Littleton before him. Fortescue went to France and he got to looking around. He was there exiled with the to-be king of France. He was a common lawyer from England, got to looking around and said, wow, I see the difference now. He was in France, you see. He saw the difference between the two traditions and how much difference it made, and he wrote a book about it called In Praise of English Law. In Praise of English Law. William Blackstone's commentaries, called Commentaries on the Laws of England, or Compare and Contrast the Law of the Land and the Law of the City. William Blackstone was educated as a Law of the City lawyer, and then he attended an inner court and became a common lawyer, and he was funded. There was a Jewish merchant in England by the name of Werner, just like the old soda pop, and he gave him a lot of money, endowed him at Oxford to lecture on the law of the city. And he used that opportunity because he didn't like the law of the city. He knew it was inferior. That's an understatement. And he lectured on the comparing and contrasting the law of the land and the law of the city. And those lectures were put to print. They're called now the four volumes of Blackstone on the common law, delivered in the year 1765. That particular set of books is the most quoted authority in America. The courts quoted that book more than any other authority from the beginning of our country in 1776 till the year 1892. And those four volumes set in stone our legal tradition. And it's been a long time and a lot of work of the useful idiots of the evil empire to try to do away with it. The dean of Harvard, who is now on the Supreme Court of the United States. I forget her name, and I'm glad I've forgotten it. Whatever it is, I don't think she knows either. She's the one that said no more common law first-year courses at Harvard Law School. No more common law first-year courses at Harvard Law School. That's been 12, 15 years ago now. That's the move, to get rid of our common law, because if the common law is in place, our freedoms are gone. We went to war with England, not because of taxes. Taxes were to the war with England were a promotion. A promotion, just like slavery was a promotion to the war between the states. There were much greater things going on than that. Well, that's what was going on with the War of Independence from Britain, separation from Britain, was they told us that our common law did not apply. They extended the boundary of Quebec down to the Ohio River and said the law of Quebec is going to be the canon law of the Church of Rome, and we're extending the boundary to the Ohio River. Well, that encroached upon the colonies, the land charters of all those states, Virginia northward. They said, you can't do that. We're a common law people. We have common law countries. We're a common law country. We demand trial by jury, which is only available at common law. We demand a warrant when you go to search our homes and our warehouses, only available at common law. And on it goes. Again, thank you. Thank you for the question. But you need to get one of those books. You can get mine. You can get, of course, reading Blackstone would help you. But mine's not as big as Blackstone. It's only one volume. I would suggest you get it, and it's written in a form of English that is a little more contemporary.
Okay. Thank you, Brent, very much. Okay, we got a few minutes left. So I'm going to try Rhonda once again and see if she's there. Rhonda from Florida. You've been on
Hello.
Mute. Hello.
Hi. How are y'all?
Oh, pretty good.
Good. Well, I was sorry to hear about your back.
Yeah. Thank you.
I hope it gets better. I called in last week for a little bit. I know it was really late, so I had a couple more comments that I wanted to make on hydroxychloroquine, mostly just to let people know a little bit so that they could think about it all. I know you guys have talked about different things on COVID and all that. So, like all medications, I know you're probably aware that everything can have side effects. Doesn't mean that everybody will get them, you know, or get one, but mm-hmm. all medications can cause something. And it may not be that you have some problem occur right away, but these things can always cause changes and effects that can damage our immune system, the body, whether it's weeks or months and even years later. As far as hydroxychloroquine, I was going to ask you, I don't know if you know that, I read a couple of studies, and actually they really don't know how this drug works in the body. They do know that it produces enzymes in our cells, and that's what like goes out and attacks whatever viruses. So the enzymes actually damage the cell walls of a virus, and that's what can kill them in our bodies. But they're not really sure if this drug can change the DNA in a cell. And so if it could do that, you can get, you know, good changes that can help fight, make the body fight better, but you can also get negative changes. And those changes, when cells divide, will keep producing either positive or negative effects. And if they're negative, that damaged DNA can produce damaged cells, and that process gets repeated, and then you can have even more disease and injury. So they really don't know enough on this drug as far as that.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because just let me say before I forget, I've been reading up on it, and one of the doctors said they believe that it has something to do with it makes the cell walls more permeable so that it can push the stuff out. And what you have to realize, though, is this hydroxychloroquine is not a long-term cure. It's a short-term cure. Look at the reason
exactly.
You caught the COVID in the first place is because you had a compromised immune system. So it will get you over the hump, but you better start taking supplements and changing your diet, because what it means is you're going to get sick. So it is a crutch, and it will get you over it. It takes people off of ventilators in 5 hours. They're off the ventilator, and within 5 days, the thing is gone. However, it works. But this one paper said they thought that it had something to do with the cell wall being more permeable. I don't know. You know, it was above my pay grade, but it's kind of interesting. And I just want to let people know that, you know, if you should get sick and you use hydroxychloroquine, you better get on a regime, because you're going to relapse, maybe even worse, if you don't fix up your immune system, because that's, you only caught it in the first place because your immune system was compromised. And whether it was because you took vaccinations or you got other things going on, or you're eating too much high fructose corn syrup and a refined sugar diet, which is the biggest thing that we do wrong in the world. So you need to really clean up your act, all right? Go ahead. You can finish. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Oh, no, that's fine. You're right, though, because that's something, like, even with this drug or any drug that healthcare providers always worry about, a lot of people think that, oh, gosh, if I take one pill and it's making me feel good, then maybe I should take more. And when they don't know enough about something, or you take more and more, that's how people forget you can really hurt yourself. It doesn't really make you better. It makes you worse.
And there's no magic pill out there either. That's the other thing.
Right. When I was in PA school, I had a classmate who was had been a dietitian. So she was called in to help rheumatoid arthritis patients who were being treated with this drug. And she said, wow, I couldn't believe it, because these people were losing their teeth. They were, like, falling out, and they couldn't eat. And she basically learned that they had been on HCQ for some time, which can be really common with this drug, not like people with COVID would probably be on it for a long time. But like I said, you don't know that what could happen, you know, shorter term could happen, even with those, like what occurs long term. And what these people were finding out, and what they found out, this drug can make the bone become necrotic or die, and so you get bone loss, and it can't support structures like the teeth and everything, so it literally causes the teeth to fall out.
And boy, that's not a drug I would want to be on right now.
I know, you know, and they couldn't even eat, because they couldn't even have dentures, because they had lost so much bone in their jaws. A friend of mine has a mother, so as we know, supposedly this virus, like anything, like it can have a greater impact on the elderly. Her mother is 85, so her mother is compromised. She has Alzheimer's, and she was tested positive in the nursing home for COVID, so they put her in the hospital. After a few days on HCQ, her heart rate started to drop really low. At first they felt, we don't know, is this the virus causing it or what's going on? They finally decided it was HCQ that was causing her heart rate to drop. So they pulled her off, and her kidneys started to fail, but somehow she has come back. And maybe since they pulled her off the drug, she's still, so they say, testing, quote, positive, after like 2.5 weeks in the hospital. And she's eating again a little bit and seems to be perking up. But, you know, I don't know, you know, as far as that. And if it's something to do with the combination of what she's being treated with or whatever is causing this particular virus, I don't know.
You can test positive for COVID if you got the flu vaccine, because...
I know. See, I don't know.
It's a dog. It comes from a dog RNA, and that's all they're looking for with that test. So if you received any vaccine that has that dog RNA in it, you're going to test positive. That's what they're not telling people. That the tests are very, very inaccurate. So she probably didn't even really have it the way they said she had it. She just happened to have some of that DNA or RNA in her, and it picked it up. And so then they throw her on that stupid other medicine and just about killed her. And that's generally what you find with hospitals. Look, at hospitals are good for emergency care if you break a bone or microsurgery, but they're really, really terrible for any kind of chronic health care, cancer or anything like that. They really don't have the answer, and it's because you've got the drug companies that are educating the doctors, and they're educating them in the ways that will sell their medicines, and that's it. So, you know, we have a really poor health care system in America when it comes to chronic diseases like diabetes and cancer. And it's, and the answer to those things are so simple, it's not even funny, you know what I mean? It's disgusting the way they run, you know, all this cancer stuff over us. And, you know, you got these cancer associations collecting millions and millions of dollars, and people running for cancer and doing this for cancer and all these other diseases. And meanwhile, they're all caused by a poor diet, by an American diet, but they don't tell you that. And they get all this money, and they don't want to heal it because they're making money on it, and that's the bottom line. You know, my goodness. Look at women's cancer, whether it be breast, ovarian, uterus. If you just took vitamin D every day, you lower your chances of getting any of those cancers by something like 34% just by taking a little vitamin D3 capsule. And you would think that every doctor would push that on every woman that comes in his office, but they don't, because they're not trained in that.
No, they're not. Having been through PA school, I can tell you, we got like one course in nutrition, and I think we went roughly once a week for maybe 5 weeks. And, you know, in a 20-page PowerPoint, you can't, like, get that much information.
I'll tell you what the proof is. The proof is in the pudding. Because if you are a million-dollar stud racehorse and you're sick, they don't treat the horses the way they treat us. The first thing they look at a horse is its nutrition. What trace minerals are missing? They do blood tests, and they look at their nutrients. And if he's chewing the fence, he's obviously low in this or that. So, you know, the money, there's money in those horses, and so it behooves them to give them the right treatment. So if you look at the way they treat animals, animals get better, a more advanced treatment than we get. So, anyway, we only got a few minutes left, so I think I got one person left, so go ahead, Ron, to say, you know, you can wrap up here if you can.
They're the only actual completed clinical trial that they have on hydroxychloroquine is one that was completed in China, and they did it on like 30 patients in the Shanghai province. Like what they did, 15 people were on HCQ, 15 people were on some alternative therapy. And the concerns they had with that particular trial was pretty limited in the amount of people that were involved. And they came out and learned from that one that really and truly the results between the two groups, there weren't but maybe 2 or 3 days, and the length of time they spent being treated and the time that they got well. Maybe one person on HCQ developed more acute symptoms, but overall they didn't see any real changes in their physical, you know, any differences between those on HCQ and those on the alternative therapy. So they recommended that hopefully, like all these studies that they're having and clinical trials, that they'll do bigger samples, that they'll do more time involved. But with the FDA streamlining everything, they're trying to push everything out, whether it's HCQ, a vaccine, or whatever. They're trying to streamline it, and that's my biggest concern. I don't know if Mr. Winters has a comment on that, because this has been the problem with medicine and big pharma and all the class action lawsuits. They do all their trials, but they don't tell you, oh, yeah, it can really do this, and it doesn't do what we say it does. And then all these people start getting terrible effects and dying, which leads to all those losses and everything.
I don't know if you know it or not, but they haven't done but one study in the past 40, 50 years on any vaccination. And as far as its safety and its efficacy, they're supposed to be reporting them every 2 years to the CDC, and they haven't done even one. Those vaccines are not proven. They don't have – and the reason they don't do them is because they know what the studies will say. The studies that they cause autism, and they cause this problem, they cause that. And they just lost a lawsuit, and where they where it turned out that the vaccine absolutely causes autism. Of course, you won't find that on online anywhere. Wikipedia, they'll tell you it's been it's been debunked. You know, anything that's been debunked, you better look into it, because it's the exact opposite of what they're saying. So, you know, look up debunked things and just do the opposite, and you'll be pretty safe. Anyway, that being said,
the only thing I'll say to that is I can tell you with medicine, that's typical to medicine. They're in school, you don't get anything. You go to pediatrics, you rotate there, and you learn about what drugs, what vaccines kids can get and when they should get it. And honestly, that's the extent of what you learn, unless you go out there and research on your own. I mean, really,
Pretty sad. It always was in the trades and in the sciences. Basically, there was, you know, you learn through apprenticeship. You always got signed on by somebody, and you practiced under them, and that's why they call it a practice, because that's what you're doing. You're practicing. So, you know, look at on-the-job training is the best, as long as you're taking what you learn and examining it in a scientific manner, and hopefully improving, you know, what you know. So, I don't know. It's not very good today, though, their system. So,
no, medicine will never use the word cure. They will never use that word.
Right. Okay, thank you, Rhonda. We appreciate it. I'm going to open Dan back up, and we'll finish up with him, because we've got like 2 minutes and perfect timing. Thank you.
All right.
Yep.
You're welcome.
Okay, Dan, I've opened you up. I don't know if you're still in there because I didn't get you out, or you got something to say, but you got a minute or so. Go ahead.
Oh, yes. Thank you very much. And we certainly enjoyed a lot of the fine comments tonight, different ones brought out. No question, we learn every night and with this forum. And I got on there just a little bit past when Mr. John DeRash started this evening, but I'm trying to make this question here in regard. Tonight when he was speaking, I heard so much of what sounded a continuous series of last couple of presentations. And I refer to what is the topic. I believe it's the Declaration of the Restoration of the Law of Our Land. Was this the third? He can certainly tell us immediately. Third presentation or ongoing series. That is tonight what he spoke on.
Yeah, I believe this is the.
Yeah, that was part three. If you're looking at your browser, you should be able to see it's a declaration to restore the law of the land. You can find it under the grand jury tab. First one down, action against the judiciary. And these are all the papers we've served on our servant government over the past few years, which is hundreds of documents. But we started our decision in order and declare that they ought to restore the law on August 17, 2019. But we actually started with the paperwork back in 2015, and I think it was 2017 we opened up a case, really a place for really storing our paperwork and filing different informations and so on, and then eventually became a court case. And then we opened up on August 17th, we actually opened up another number which declared it to be a court of record and under natural law. And so that's where that paper was 50 some odd pages long, and we read it over the past 3 weeks. Anybody that wants to, they can go up and read the paper right here, or if they want to listen, they can go over to our other page. Let me get to it here, which is the weekly call, okay? And you'll see the recordings right here towards the top of the page here. Last week was part two, and the week before was part one, right here.
Absolutely.
So tonight, tomorrow morning, part three will be posted.
Fabulous. I would like to behoove all of us to share this with our closest warm market of people we know, and this is a way we could use that as building blocks, because the core value of the mission couldn't be said any better what Mr. John DeRash has been laboring and delivering to us, and tonight is the third presentation. I just applaud all the knowledge and the hard work that he and various others, and Gerard, we just, countless others that we could probably say is in the background of research, but definitely at spearhead of this course has been Mr. John DeRash. And so, and also our mentor, Brent Allen Winters, we just are so blessed and talented with the commentary there, and the different things that he brings as added feature or benefit. So what I'm trying to say is, please, everyone, try now harder than ever to bring some of your warm markets by sharing these presentations, which is a core value of the mission statement, if I can say it any better, of what NLA is really delivering and is the key entity across America. We're talking about 3,133 counties, folks, and all of us are being apprised by NLA, and especially our mentors. And yours truly there, Mr. John DeRash and Mr. Gerard and Brent Allen Winters. And forgive me if there's another party other than Jan. Just are some that stand out in my mind. And we're so appreciative. And Gerard, please take it easy.
We do have a lot of people behind the scenes, people organizing and making phone calls and doing different researches and different things. And just planning a lot of different activities, also encouraging people to get active on the grassroots level. So again, you know, people need to get involved. We've got quite a few committees, and we've also got quite a few people involved on the national level. Nowhere's near enough. We need more. We need people. We need everyone, a lot of people on the state levels to really get involved. So again, everybody should get involved here.
Absolutely. When I first, we need to close here, and when I first heard you speak, Mr. John, I really said to myself, this is what the material that our President of the United States should be rendering out to us, we the people, in a State of the Union address, and I am convinced that those three presentations and any others that you would do would be a great idea if we could get a CD-ROM. I'd be willing to pay a certain amounts contributing for this to happen to our president, especially before, you know, it's not going to be, it's less than 180 days, folks.
Yeah, but bear in mind that, and it's a good idea. I like that idea. I think you need to be more specific, and we've got the plan of what we want to put into that. But bear in mind, we have every paper we've ever filed, every paper we've ever written that we've served on anyone, anywhere, and the president has gotten a copy of that, and so has the Justice Department, Barr, and before that, Sessions. And of course, on the people we're talking to, the United States Supreme Court, all 94 federal district courts, and both houses of Congress, and then from time to time, different individuals, you know, like people involved with the IRS, for instance. We served on the, I think it's commissioner is his title. We served that. And other cases. We also served the case that we did here in New York that they defaulted on for gun control. We moved that into the federal court. But we've got a lot that we've done. And again, just reading those papers alone is a huge, huge education.
Which means
following up with, you know, once you read through a paper, you know, you go back and then you read through it again and take a look at the footnotes, because the footnotes really expound and expand its meaning.
Yeah, they're the
teaching part. How true, and honestly, with what you just said, it's no doubt tremendously applauded, and I know would be appreciated by our president, knowing him as I do, and his organization. And I will tell you, there's nothing like the luxury of hearing your presentation, your voice tone, your audio, how you impress, and when you're speaking. I mean, you flow and that could be as busy as our president, things that he could use and pick up on, and I just think it would be a grand idea to if we could get someone to do it, and I would like to contribute for the cost as to that, if we could get that audio of CD-ROMs, of knowing he can go to our website, of course, and hear it there, but there's nothing like a
I think what we would need is a committee to get together and go through things. We do have people that have put a lot of the stuff we say in writing, that's posted. We've got lots and lots, everything we do is recorded, so we've got lots of different things that could be drawn out of those things and put together onto a CD. But we'd have to get a committee together that would go through this stuff and try to figure out what is best to put on it, and then, of course, we could send it out. Now, I presume you mean just sending a copy to President and his administration, I presume.
Yes, I'd say
we can send one to his entire, to each person in his cabinet and so on. But again, we need someone to do the work, because we've got so many other things going. We could never do that work without having more people involved that would really work for that work. And that's not the only thing. We opened up earlier speaking about we need help with maybe something like Facebook and Twitter. We've got a YouTube channel, which they did close down, but they reopened it back up. They must have heard us talking, because we were ready to go after them on that. And we're still going to go after them on something. We'll be revealing that soon. We're working on the paper. But
you
again,
know what that means? That means that we're on every list out there, so good or bad. But
we need people. We need people. Let's get committees going. Let's get the word. And look, even if you don't contact us and you get involved with getting the word out to other people, I mean, anything to get the message out, get people involved, get people here, get them educated, and let's really save this nation. Let's take back the government.
That was one of the points that I made earlier in a suggestion for all of us, our warm markets. We need to encourage, and it's right there. Just like you said, it'll be posted sometime tomorrow, those presentations. Those people can get an education like they would never get an education anywhere in America, and so convenient. So, but for a president to show total respect for him, I still say, why we know he is a workaholic and is a no-nonsense, he gets the job done, he cuts right to the chase. I know he would appreciate this, so to have the audio to accompany along with the other, no doubt about it, labor of love that you and your staff and all the others that are involved have already, been getting this to our president timely, so I'm sure of that.
Yeah, he could listen to it while he sleeps. We'll put subliminal messages in for him to also.
Absolutely, subliminal.
Anyway,
yes, sir.
We're after midnight, so I'm going to go ahead and say goodbye and thank everybody for coming. And it was a great, great meeting, and we have another one next week, same time. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, John and Brent and Terry and everybody else, Francine, that makes this possible. And Jim Bag of Beans, and I'm not going to mention everybody, but there's a whole slew of them out there that make us look good. When we look good, it's because of them. Anyway, thank you, guys.
And let's not forget to pray for your soon recovery there with your back.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're so welcome.
Yeah.